This is the Preparedness Radio Network, preparing you for natural and man-made disasters, helpful tips on gardening and homesteading. Be prepared and remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Layman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers at sunoven.com. That's preppers at sunoven.com. BHM Radio is on the air on the Preparedness Radio Network. BHM Radio is the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine, expanding the stories you love in print live across the net. And now, your hosts for BHM Radio, Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci.
Hey, good morning and welcome to Backwoods Home Magazine's Self-Reliance Exposed with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci. How you doing out there, Colorado?
Doing pretty good, man. Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
You know, I feel pretty good for a Saturday. you know, it's been a long week, my friend. We've been going like gangbusters this week, getting ready for the expo coming up in Colorado Springs on May 18th and 19th.
You know, when I first started these, I had no idea how much work these are.
Well, and you know, it's funny, when you started the Self-Reliance Expo before we became partners and then we joined with Redshed Media Group, you know, it was you and your wife and your family. Well, which is army in itself. I mean you got Heather is like a general. I mean, she's pointing fingers and getting things done and everything else. And of course, not like most military generals, because after she's completely done, the poor thing goes in the back room and cries and goes, "Why did I get into this?" But
yeah.
But God bless her. She's a strong woman, and she's pointing out. And you got your kids. They've always helped out at every show, and. Yeah. And so that was good, but it was you used to say it was a monumental task to get those things done with just your family.
Oh, and, it was.
Yeah, and then we joined up, and then we added a couple extra hands to it, and then everything else, and then we joined with Redshed Media Group. They bought us, and we partnered up, and now we're co-owners in the big company, and I'll tell you what, even though we've got even more hands, the shows have gotten so big, I bet it still feels like you are doing the show by yourself with your family.
You know, it seems like you never, you know, it never ends. I've got to learn to write lists like you do, because you know, I'll be in the middle of the day. Oh yeah, I got to do that. And then I'll stop what I'm doing to go do that, and it just it's just terrible. I feel like I'm chasing my tail all day, and I get everything done, but it just seems like I'm always behind the eight ball.
Yeah, well, it happens, and let me tell you. The invention, when the iPad was invented, you know, trees all over the world, you know, threw up their limbs in joy, because I am a list master, and I would go through a pad of paper a day and the trees would weep. And yeah, you know, now that I've gone electronic, they're like, thank God, because
yeah.
Yeah, I schedule my bathroom breaks, so.
All right, yeah, I have time to go now.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Well, you know, I get up about 4 o'clock every morning, and yeah, sometimes I sleep until 5, and I have my day blocked out, and we are going, and not just me, guys. Well, Colorado Ron doesn't get up that early. He's a late night person, and I'm an early morning person. So yep. it kind of balances out for the most part. But, you know, from the time we get up in the morning until usually the time we go to bed, the phone don't stop ringing or emails don't stop coming in.
No, definitely.
And I remember the first time I was sitting down with Colorado Ron and he looked at his phone because we were doing a road trip together, and there was like 87 voicemails or something on his phone. And he's like, I've got to turn this over to someone else. I was like, oh, my God. So.
Oh, yeah, it was terrible. But you know what? Yesterday was a good day because I jumped up in the morning and I took off to get some errands done for the first half of the day, because the second half of the day I got to go to my daughter's track meet and spend the day. It was the finals, so it was pretty exciting to see that. She did great. She made it to state, so – that'll be exciting. Unfortunately, state is May 18th.
Oh no!
So I'm gonna miss it. But she did make it to state, so that's good. I'm glad.
Congratulations, Heather. And so people aren't confused. He's not married to his daughter. His daughter's name is Heather.
No.
His wife's name is Heather. So congratulations.
Yes, my wife is Heather, and my daughter's Heather Marie.
Okay. Well,
so,
good for her.
Yeah, no,
good for her.
Yeah, she did great. She did great. She was trucking it pretty good. But, you know, those doggone meets, especially that last one like that, I mean, they're long. We got there at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and by the time I got home, it was 10:15. So it was a long, long day out in the sun. But it was good.
Yeah, well, and you know, people, it's kind of funny. We are, like I said, our event's like a week and a half away, and we try to get in our family stuff in between this. And I think it's probably one of the nice reasons why all of us teaming up and growing as a group has been helpful, because someone can always try to pick up the extra slack. But when, I mean, this is a family owned and operated show, because almost everybody that is part of Red Shed has a family and is into the family preparedness. And we still all somehow manage to find a little bit of time to go and do the family functions, which I think is basically what we try to preach at the events.
Right. Yeah. You know, it was funny because I was still taking calls, you know. So one of the exhibitors from the event called, and I took the call, and he goes, what's that noise in the background? And I said, well, I'm at my daughter's track meet. And he goes, you know, I will never interrupt somebody during their family time. I said, it's fine. She's not running right now. I've got another half hour to wait before her next run. And so he laughed. He laughed, and we got our business done. But it was fun to be there. It was fun to see that and spend the time with the family. And still managed to get calls done and emails sent out from the – I love technology.
Yeah, I agree. So – you know, last, you know, speaking of, you know, trying to get ready for a show and everything else, you were out at USA Prepares event in Springfield, Missouri last weekend. You called live from the event. And, you know, we've known Vince for a while, and you know the event sounded like it went pretty well. Tell us a little bit about how wrap it up for us.
Yeah, well, the event went well. You know, they had it was Gangbusters on Saturday. Yeah, it was a Saturday Sunday event, so it's Gangbusters on Saturday morning, and then they did well the rest of the time. The they had some good speakers there, and that was pretty exciting. They also had, some of the vendors looked familiar, and then some of them were a little bit more local to that area, which was really cool because he pulls in some good local talent to Springfield, Missouri. So that was neat to see. And then they had these cool trucks that were there, they were kind of. They're these expedition type vehicles, but they could be built to be a bug out type vehicle. Of course, they're about $300,000 a piece. So, a little on the pricey side, but they were cool. They're very cool. But it was a good time. We had a good time, and Vince was seemed very happy with the show when I left. He said that was one of his best shows yet. So good for him.
Well, congratulations to Vince and USA Prepares. You know, it's kind of funny. We always get comments and people go, oh, there's this other event. And, you know, guys, you know, our radio station, our radio show and everything else, we like to say we're a family-friendly, educational media company. And we support the other organizations. They may not support us, which is fine. But our goal here is to get everybody access to as much of this information as possible. And you know, Vince does a good job. He runs a AM radio talk channel, and you know, he had a good event. So you know, good for him, and we hope him only the best in the future. One day we hope that we can manage to get 30 or 40 of these things a year and get to everybody. Unfortunately, that'll have to be when we have a lot more people.
Yeah. I'm thinking right now, holy cow, one every other month is enough for me.
Yeah, no kidding. So let's talk about this. So next weekend, this coming week you should see information, but, our July 27th and 28th event in Dallas, Texas is an official go. So I think we'll be posting that up here this week with some information. It might be a little slow because we're getting ready to go ahead and, like I said, do our other event. And then we're actually, for the first time ever, going to the East Coast, and we're going to Hickory, North Carolina, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah, Hickory, North Carolina. And that's kind of a not a lot of people were expecting that one, but we've gotten so many calls about coming to the East Coast, we just figured we'd better start looking over there, and so we did, and we chose Hickory, North Carolina, and it'll be September 14th and 15th. So, we looked at several places over there, and we traveled all over the place, but Hickory, North Carolina seemed to be the spot. So,
yeah, and that's going to be awesome. That's September 14th, 15th, and then we are going to end the year in the warm and wonderful Mesa, Arizona. That's October 26, 27, right?
That's right. That's right. Yep. And we planned that on purpose.
Well, yeah, because
most of the people who work for the company.
But
I'm not going down there in July.
Exactly. Most of the people in our company live in either the north or the northeast. And so I kind of feel like these old people that go south for the winter.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, where do we want to do our last event when winter's starting to come on? Florida, Arizona. Yeah. Who's in spring training? No, I'm just kidding. I think that'll be good. This is going to be a busy year. It's a busy year.
Yes. Yep. Well, so, and on our event coming up here in Colorado Springs, you know, it was pretty exciting that our new keynote, Karen Hood, is joining us for the you know, taking the keynote speaking position in Colorado Springs. So that's pretty cool new news coming up on the expo.
Right, and for those of you guys who don't know who Karen Hood is, she is the widow of the late great Ron Hood. You know, he was doing survivalist stuff and prepping when prepping wasn't cool. So
yeah. He's been doing it for years. Yeah, he's the grandfather of prepping survival.
Survival.com.
Survival stuff.
And now she's the editor in chief of their magazine, and she's still continuing on to doing all this stuff. So we're very honored to have Karen Hood at the event. And towards the end of the show, guys, we have the. I don't think Colorado Ron has it up yet. He's going to be this is a housekeeping thing. He's going to be jumping off halfway through the show. He's got an interview at a radio station. They're interviewing him as opposed to him interviewing other people. And so that's good. So hopefully you won't start trying to ask the host questions as opposed to letting him ask you questions.
Yeah, it should be pretty good. But, yeah, they want to talk about the expo coming up in Colorado Springs, and today was the best day they could do it. So, sorry, guys, but I have to jump off for hopefully just a short few minutes there, and I'll be back.
Yeah, but, you know, he will – in a few minutes, we will be talking to David Lee again from Unruly Elf. And today we're going to try to stay a little more concentrated and talk about you know, different sorts of unconventional housing that you may be able to do in your area. I've got some things to throw at him because I've got a situation that's come up that maybe we can kind of talk through. I think it fits in with his government rule changes sort of thing.
For your chicken coop?
No. My chicken tractor and my chicken coop are okay, but there's a whole other situation. Well, hopefully you'll be in for a little bit of it. And then,
did it make you get a building permit for it?
No. Although it's big enough. Well, I started adding the swimming pool the other day, and they saw me for the chickens, and they were kind of like, hey, what's going on here? For our second guest, we're getting ready to do our expo, and we get products all the time. And there was this wonderful lady from Wyoming, and her name is Jerry McFarlane. And she just created a new product, and she's just starting to get it out in the market, and she decided to use the Self-Reliance Expo as her launching platform. And I went and bought a couple of the product, and it's called the Jar Box. And if you go to my Facebook page, and I'll populate it here, it is the coolest thing. It is the new Tattler. I mean, what Tattler did to lids, Jar Box is going to do to jar storage.
Really?
You heard it from Bubba first. Oh, my God, Ron. I'm going to get a set for your wife so she can play with them. I'm going to buy her first set so you guys can say, oh, my God. I mean, she's a prepper. She is a canner. And she was tired of having breakage in there. And so she invented this box. And it's clear plastic. Again, I'm going to populate this up on my page right now.
I'll check it out.
And it is the coolest thing since sliced bread. And I went and used them yesterday. I stacked them up. I mean, I could not break those jars. And when she sent them to me, she actually sent them to me with jars in the jar boxes. And they didn't break.
Nice.
That's how amazing they are.
I gotta check this out now.
I'm raving. But yeah, this is the kind of success story, kind of like Tattler. Yeah, here's a guy. You know, here's some preppers, and here's people who are getting away from the system. They're putting their money out there. I mean, this is a little gal from Wyoming. She joked around. She's like, you know, yeah, I'm the CEO, but I'm not much. I wear flannel shirts and have pigtails. And I laughed and I said, you're going to fit in great with our group. She's just getting started, and she's like, just kind of going through this whole thing. And I'm just real proud to have her on and find someone like, look at that link, guys. real proud to have someone on that is going out there and trying to do it and getting started, because we love those success stories. We've been blessed at the expo, wouldn't you agree, Ron, that we've had probably a half a dozen real good, you know, family-oriented success stories where someone got started and is just doing really well now.
Yeah, and that's what keeps us going, honestly.
Right.
That's the stuff that we love to hear.
I mean, Pantry Paratus, and now, I mean, if she launches with us, and I mean, she's got a great product, but if she launches with us and she has a great event, she's looking for distributors and things like that, she doesn't even know, she's just getting started. She says, you know, she's not tech savvy, she's not any of this stuff. And
oh my,
I think
goodness.
Her product is, are you looking at the pictures?
I just saw the pictures. How cool is that?
Now, these things,
right.
they snap together. You get two, which is a top and a bottom, and you can break them apart. And I broke one set apart, and so you can see the top, how you can stack jars inside it and just use the top half. But then you can seal them up, and there's actually holes in it that you can use zip ties, so if you're traveling, they won't pop open.
Oh, now that is a cool idea. Oh, man,
yeah.
I'm excited to talk. All right.
And it's cool stuff. And like I said, she sent it FedEx to my house, and I with jars in it. And they don't typically come with jars because she said, you know, hey, I'm glad you got these. Thanks for doing this, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no problem. I like to test the stuff before I bring it on the air. And she said, do you mind if I put jars inside it so I can test and see how it'll ship with jars? And I said, okay, well, I'm going to pay to have it FedExed over. And she's like, okay, well, we'll take care of the FedEx because we're going to send it, and we're going to send it as fast as they can do it because we want them to shake up the box and see how it packs. And
okay.
she paid to have it overnighted for us instead of 4 days like I was going to do. And when it arrived the next morning, the box all misshapen and everything else, the jars and everything were unbroken. Very impressive. Very impressive.
Wow. That is a cool product. I can't wait to talk to her about that. Okay, cool.
All right.
That is very cool.
Let's get on with David and get with the government stuff. We're going to take a quick two commercial break, guys, and when we come back, we'll be back with David Lee from The Unconventional Elf. He got kicked out of the North Pole and is now in Maine building houses for all survivalists and homesteaders. So we'll talk to you guys back in two commercials.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They're the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them that Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Self-Reliance Expo. Self-Reliance Expo. Wow, see? I'm so excited about our expo coming up. How about Backwoods Home Magazine's Self-Reliance Exposed? See?
There we go.
Sorry, guys. I'm sure the people of our Backwoods Home are probably cringing right now. And you know, they're big supporters of our expo, and I've got expo on the brain. So they'll just have to forgive me. So we are back with Colorado Ron and Bubba Da Vinci, and with us is the infamous man who's been kicked out of the North Pole, David Lee. David, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hey, welcome back,
doing,
David.
I'm doing good.
So we've been doing some background information and everything else, and we heard the unruly elf got its name because you were originally a Santa's helper, and then your designs were just a little too bizarre for the North Pole, and they kicked you to Maine. Is any of that true?
You guys have some pretty good investigators there. Yeah, that's all true.
we get all our information from the Secret Service who protect Obama.
Uh huh. Okay, well, we'll have to be careful today because I understand you want to talk about the political aspects of home building here, and you know, I think you know I don't want Homeland Security coming up the driveway anytime soon. We'll talk.
Yeah, there you go. Well, welcome back, and thank you for coming on again. We had such a great time last weekend, and this is one of those topics that you could probably do a show every week on. Hint, hint.
Oh yes. we could get into real trouble here.
We've got a slot open for you if you ever want your own show, David. you know, we were talking last week about some of the projects that you had done for Backwoods Home Magazine, and you know, and how you kind of made your projects out of materials that you can do yourself, and proving that you can do it inexpensively. If you can manage your own labor and just take care of, just pay basically for your materials and your land and things. And we wanted to keep going on that trend because we started getting people popping up with questions and everything else. And we wanted to make sure we gave it a little bit more time. So,
okay. Well, my premise is when I started building houses, I bought an old house and I started to fix it up and a sort of magical thing happened to me. This is shortly after I got kicked out of the North Pole. I was teaching school in Vermont, and we had a flood over there. And Vermont gets some pretty serious floods sometimes. You know, it's all mountains and valleys and so on. And a few weeks after the flood, I was walking around in a place by a lake near the house and found all this stuff that had floated down the river and piled up there. There were beams, a whole lumber yard had washed out, just materials like you wouldn't believe. So I collected those, and of course, part of building with little expense is using used materials, and that started me on it. So I believe in using used materials, but I like to use new materials too. And even when you do, labor is still a major portion of any home. Guess you're finding that out now, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately. I just kind of on a side note, after we talked to you last weekend, I decided that I was going to, we have a couple, not a couple, we have multiple projects that we're trying to get done around our house. Yeah, we just moved up to rural Iowa. We bought a house that was built in the 1800s to say that I am not a handy person would be a drastic understatement. If anybody that has seen my chicken tractor or my overbuilding of a chicken coop will be able to attest to that. I decided, after listening to you, I believed in what you said, which is, you need to kind of get in there and get your hands dirty and try some of this stuff yourself. And one of our big projects is we have a wraparound front porch
that's starting to rot and it needs to be replaced. And so although I don't think I'm ready to go ahead and do that whole project myself, and people out there are probably laughing saying it's a porch, how difficult going to be? You know, it's a porch that was built in the 1800s, tongue and groove, and I don't think there's probably a square angle anywhere on the house, which is probably why they did a wraparound, and it's got columns and everything else, and it probably goes, I wouldn't know with how many degrees, but it goes, it's like a slight slant from the house down so water runoff can go, you know, from it. Mm-hmm. And so what I decided to do is, we have a resource here, which a lot of people don't, which is an incredible amount of Amish. We have a lot of Amish in this area.
Sure.
And so this afternoon, as soon as the radio show gets off, my wife and I are going to drive out to one of the Amish contractors, and we're going to hopefully complete the deal. And we're going to have them come and do the porch, and they're going to let me do it with them, milling the wood, you know, putting all the stuff together so I can actually get the hands on, but I don't screw up the porch so my wife makes me pay for it a second time.
Well, that's an excellent plan, because the Amish are excellent carpenters, and they work for fair prices too. And my suggestion would be, here when they do this work, get right out there and watch everything they do, and maybe take pictures too, because knowledge is everything. You know, the thing that saves you money on any big project is what you do, and what you do comes from what you've learned.
Well, yeah, exactly, and you know, that's how most of us learn, you know, and I've had this saying forever that, you know, to do is to know, and, you know, once you're able to get your hands in there and do it yourself, it is surprising how easy it is once you're done, you're like, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought, but, you know, breaking into it and actually getting, you know, it can be intimidating, you know, and so one of the questions I had is, have you ever worked with what's it called? Is it called SIP or ISP? The insulated panel boards.
Well, I haven't used that. I've used various kinds of things. I try to keep my building materials really simple, you know, and not high tech, because I don't know, sometimes high tech doesn't work out as well. And of course, it's always very expensive, and sometimes you need special ways to put the thing together. What kind of a project did you want to use this on?
Well, I thought, obviously, you know, a lot of people build homes out of it, and mm-hmm. I actually was looking at building a shed, and I thought, well, mm-hmm. you know, before I attempt to build a home out of it, maybe I should build a shed first.
That's exactly right. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I always tell people in all my articles and everything, if you're going to take on any of these fairly complicated projects, just do something small first. When I talk about my roofing project, I tell people to do a shed first and see how it works. And that gives you a chance to get some experience. And, you know, if there's any tools you're missing, you can get those together. So when the big project comes, you'll be able to do it, which is what you're doing with a SIP. And that's the way to go.
You know, and I was actually talking with somebody yesterday who has experience in building with them, and, you know, they sure made it sound awful simple, but once I looked at the material cost, though, that's where I was a little concerned. Of course, you know, you get your built-in insulation already, you know, so you got some added benefit, but, you know, just to build a shed that's probably 8 by 16 or so was, you know, $1,000 in material. Just in the foam. Yeah, so that kind of got. I was like, ooh, that kind of hurt a little bit. So mm-hmm. I'm still a little gun shy on pulling the trigger on the SIP, just because I think it can be done cheaper.
It definitely can be done cheaper. Okay, well, for the practical side to this, I would say that you know, there's this wonderful invention. It's called the computer. And
yep.
Google something. There's a Google company, you know, and you just write in there what you want to know. And my goodness, I wish something like this had been around when I first got kicked out of the North Pole, because life would have been a lot easier. But there's pictures and movies of everything you could probably possibly want to do in a house, and learn it from there first. Try a small project, and then go forth. You know? if you're going to build a small shed, you know, look up how to build that small shed the conventional way first, and then try to build it yourself. And you can do it
too.
The building sounds really hard, and I guess it is if you look at it from one point of view. But from my experience, building a house is like 5,000 15-minute jobs. That is true.
That's a good point. I like that.
And it is hard, but I mean, it's not as hard as learning to play the accordion. I mean, that's hard. I tried it once, and it's tough. But building a house, you can do.
Awesome. You know, and I think that's the that's the one thing I want to tackle is figuring out how to build this shed. In the same way that I plan on building the house, just to kind of compare, what I'm going to be tackling in the future. another item I'd like to ask is, you talk about getting those recycled materials, and do you have any secrets on some of the places that you get this, or is it like off of Craigslist? I'm sure you've got a whole bunch of resources where you get things, but obviously, like glass, you said was some of the harder things to get. But where do you get some of this stuff?
Well, actually, glass is easy to get. We have there are publications all over the country where people are selling things they have, building materials, that sort of thing. Up here, it's called Uncle Henry's, and there's always things in there that are really inexpensive, and a lot of them are brand new. People ordered a couple extra windows for their house and never used them, so they've been sitting in their back room for years, and they sell them off for 10% of what they cost. There's also just kind of get out into the building community. I find deals all the time. I got 15 3x6 thermopane windows for free just for taking them away one time. And the big trouble with used materials is once you get into the network of it, you'll get too much of them. So there's that side of it too. Your shed, for practical advice, I mean, the first thing you're going to need is some sort of foundation. So, look up the various kinds of foundations. I don't know how big a deal it is. It could be a poured slab. It could be built on piers. There's a lot of ways to go. So learn the method you want to do. Try a small project and do the first part of it, the first 40 or 50, 15-minute jobs to get that part done.
I have a quick question. Sorry, do you mind if I throw it in there, Colorado? Have you ever used, I don't know in your area, but what I'm finding up here is a very good resource also, not only for the materials, but for getting ideas and other projects, are auctions. At least in a rural area, like up here where I live, and I'm not sure how it is in Maine, every weekend there's three or four property auctions.
Sure.
And you go to these people's properties or farms, and usually it's people that have passed away or things like that, and everything's being auctioned off, all the contents, farm equipment, things like that, and they allow you to look at all their structures. You go inside them and they're auctioning off the things inside there. I get more materials and some great ideas from some of these farm auctions.
There's a lot there. It's all out there. Just once you tune into where it is, it'll sort of fall all over you. Like I say, that first house I built, I collected so much stuff out of the swamp from that I was able to build a major part of three houses from it. And actually, that started me on my career of home building. So that might happen to you too.
Uh-oh.
God forbid. We got expos to run, David. We don't have time to build three houses. let's kind of go out there. That's kind of the premise of what you do. If you say you do a lot of unconventional houses and things like that, what is a good way? We get this question a lot, which is, how do I get started? How do I move out to the country? How do I do this inexpensively? I mean, if you were someone who was coming to you and say, I want to build an inexpensive house, I have two kids and it's the two of us, what direction do you send them? How do you, to go unconventional, how do you kind of get someone started?
Well, it's always the same. It's knowledge. You know, learn what you want to do. Find out all the information you can about it. Here's a really unconventional thing, because I just had this experience about a year ago. This young couple came. They had a baby. They had no money. They wanted to know how to get started, living as close to free as they could. And I recommended that they buy a boat and live on that. That's scary, huh?
A boat.
Wow. I mean, think of the
yeah.
Think of the budget for a boat. I mean, right now, given the economy, they're actually giving boats away, because boats take work to keep up. People can't afford it. You can get for next to nothing a really nice boat. And if you have a very small budget and you get a free boat and you spend, say, $5,000 or $10,000 making the thing work for you, you know, to live on, what a nice place to live, huh?
Yeah, that's kind of cool. I'm sure that's probably because, you know, Maine is a coastal state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that would definitely. So I see what you're saying is you got to look at the area you want to live in and then try to find, you know, the unconventional methods that, you know, obviously a boat's not going to work in Arizona.
No, that's not true. See, it could, because I wanted to do this once too. Here in Maine, it's not so much now, but a few years ago, there were all these sailing boats, you know, these wooden sailing boats that weren't used anymore, and they just sort of got ditched, you know, left somewhere and parked, and they weren't really seaworthy anymore. But imagine if you took like a 60-foot schooner and you had a boat company come and move it right onto your lot and plop it right down on a foundation that you have prepared. You could live in the boat on land, and this could be done in Arizona. Wouldn't that be, you'd be famous.
Wow, that would be kind of cool.
That's true.
Yeah.
It would also make a hell of a playhouse. My daughters would love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And some of these old boats are really comfortable inside. I mean, the shape's a little funny, you know, and ladders to climb and so on. But what a place to live. And you could take the masts up with a and what I wanted to do was take chicken wire and hang it up there that looked like sails, and then tie rags in them so it looked like a derelict boat out on the, well, desert in your case, but.
What a cool idea.
Yeah. Or make a restaurant out of it. Wouldn't that be sweet?
Huh? Yeah, that is kind of cool.
Have a business?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think you're probably right. You know, there's a lot of here that, you know, I'm always finding it amazing that no one does it, and I'm getting ready to hopefully start a project like it myself, which is, there are so many houses just like boats that people over the years have just walked away from.
Oh, yes.
And they're just falling down. And not only are they an eyesore, but, you know, but there's still a lot of really good material in these houses.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm finding out here is which is a little bit out in the country, but, you know, if you'll go out there and tear it down and promise that you'll take everything, which means you also have to take the garbage and dump it too, you know, whatever's left, they'll let you take these buildings apart and give you the building.
They're still doing that out there?
Oh, yeah.
Because here in New England, that happened for a few years there and got so popular that now they make you pay to take the barns down.
You will get people that have the, and I say newer barns, meaning they're probably from the 30s or 40s or 50s.
Mm-hmm.
They're still old, but they're that. But, you know, a lot of the people in the 20s, a lot of people lost their property here in Iowa, and I'm sure throughout the United States. And you have farmers that did have cash that bought up all these acreages, but they had old homesteads on them, and they just leave them there.
Mm.
And they're worried about their cows getting, you know, messed up in them and everything else. So if you'll go out there and haul it off, they'll definitely let you take the old barnwood.
Well, that's great, because that's a nice source of materials there. And that way you could build a house that's extra strong, too. I mean, some of those old hand-hewn beams and so on are just incredibly strong.
Yeah.
Well, here's another one, too. You know, one of those old barns sitting on a piece of land that you could buy would be fun, too. I've envisioned finding, because here in Maine there are beautiful old barns like that, too, but the roofs are all sway-backed, you know, and the place is all, you know, looks like it's about to fall apart. I've always wanted to buy one and then go inside and just build a structure inside that held the barn steady and would make it last forever, put different kind of roofing on it, but make it still look like an old barn out in the middle of a field and just live in there. Sort of like
that's
camouflage.
That's cool.
Yeah, that would be very cool, the cool camouflage look.
Mm-hmm. And you were talking about insulation and these panels and so on, but there's companies now that have this spray insulation. I believe one term for it is 100 to 1. They come in with these sprayers, and they just go up to the wall, and you just shoot this stuff on, and it expands immediately out to like a foot thick. And I'm thinking, boy, if you found a place you wanted to live in, like an old barn, maybe an old boat, maybe an old electrical substation or something, and you go in there and maybe do some stuff like put in your wiring and so on, and then just have these guys come in their white suits and just spray the whole inside of it so the inside of the place looks like a cave and feels like a cave.
How hard does that stuff get once it solidifies?
Well, it's pretty tough. It's like, I don't know if you've ever used these spray foams. You know, it's pretty tough on the outside. It ends up being styrofoam. But then what you can do is probably once the stuff is sprayed in, you want to carve a little bit of it away here and there, maybe make nooks and crannies in it and so on. And then you could paint something onto it that would toughen it up more, maybe epoxy or, some kind of finish on it. Wouldn't be that hard.
And it would probably add some rigidity to the structure, too.
Oh, well, yeah, quite a lot, probably, once it was sprayed in right, yes.
I mean, obviously it's not going to be, where it can take a lot of pressure, but it's going to, the problem with a lot of those old, like you talked about, swayback barns, is they've settled, and so they're stable just because they've settled. But you go in there and you remove one beam and the whole thing starts to, take a whole new shape and starts to crumble.
Yeah, you'd want to go in and do some structural tightening up in there, In my original plan was I was going to go in and build a really nice, luxurious home inside and do, stud walls and the whole thing and just fit it into the barn the best I could to do that, to stabilize the barn so it doesn't settle anymore and solve whatever problems it has and live in it. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah, it would. And most,
well, your taxes
most people
would be really low, too, as long as you never let them inside.
As long as you don't let them come in the door.
That's right.
That's right. Over here in Colorado, we got, obviously the Rocky Mountains, so there's a ton of rock here. And back in the old days, people used to build their homes out of rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't, you don't see that happening anymore. And I'm kind of curious why, other than it's just really labor intensive or what. But you would think that using all this rock out here and building a house out of rock would be fairly cheap as far as material costs.
Sure. Well, if you just built out of rock, it'd be kind of hot in the summer and cold in the winter because rock or masonry of any kind will get very cold and transmit the cold through the walls. But, yes, it's a excellent building material. You also have adobe out there. I mean, my gosh, you talk about a creative building supply. Oh, that's the best. I wanted to move to the Southwest once just so I could do an adobe project. Another thing? Oh, here's another one, too. You spoke about rocks. You know what else is out there that you could build with that would be somewhat better as far as insulation and so on is bottles.
Bottles
and concrete. You lay them up just like stones. In fact, I was on the web the other day. I just happened to see a house built like that. It is beautiful.
Bottles.
Yep. There's actually one here in southern Colorado that's built that way. I haven't been down to take a look at it, but I'd like to go down there and take a look.
Yeah.
But, it's bottles, and I believe it's either concrete or adobe and bottles.
Sure.
So.
Wouldn't you worry about someone? I mean, I guess if it's compressed in concrete, you're not going to have that much. But I'd worry about as it shifts, it would fracture or break the glass.
Well, glass is pretty strong. I have occasion sometimes to try to break wine bottles, and my gosh, you think they smash real easily? They don't. They're pretty strong. And if you put them in a matrix of concrete and on a good foundation, that's very important, so the house stays as stable as possible. Plus, you'd probably be building in frames around your windows and doors and so on. So putting it all together right and having everything connected right, it should be a pretty solid house.
Hmm.
If somebody comes up and tries to break your glass, well, shoot back, you know.
I like the way you think. Actually, yeah, I'm looking at a house that someone built with glass bottles and been up for 10 years, and they said they have no problem with it. That's interesting. Wow.
And well,
man,
sure
you, something you,
in your search, I'm sure you've seen straw bale homes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, those are really good. I mean, you could heat them with a candle. They're just beautiful, I think. And I would like to see one sometime myself. I don't know if I'd want to build one, but still, that's a possibility too. If you want an inexpensive home, they do take. You really have to know what you're doing when you build one of those, though, because there are, some difficult parts to them to build. But what about one of those?
There's actually a couple of them here, and they're really well insulated. You know, mm-hmm. My biggest fear on those would be the getting water in the wall or some, mm-hmm. and getting mold growing or something like that. But there are several of them here, and being that we live in a dry climate, it there's definitely a lot of people that take advantage of those here. Mm-hmm.
Well, all right, here's one for you. You want an inexpensive home, and probably the best home design that's ever been is a teepee.
All right.
Yes.
Teepee. Yeah.
A teepee, yep.
You know, I had a friend that actually lived in one for a while.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was pretty cool.
Yes.
Wouldn't do well in the tornadoes over there, Bubba.
Oh, no, that's the thing. Well, teepees are actually the best structure to get you through, like a hurricane or a tornado or something. Well, probably if the tornado came right over your personal teepee, you might have a problem. But just the shape lets the wind just swoop around it and keep right on going. And if the thing were, hooked down really well, you'd probably do better in one of those than a lot of houses.
Really? I wouldn't have expected that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the engineering aspect of these things is very good.
Huh.
Well,
that's interesting. I wouldn't have never expected that a teepee, although it's a strong structure, I wouldn't have expected that kind of stability in say, a storm.
Mm-hmm. Well, it depends on some things, what material you use on the outside. You know, good stiff canvas would work pretty well, and if the thing were tied into the ground really well, picture yourself as a tornado coming along. All you've got is this pointy round thing on the ground there. You can't push it like it has a wall to push against or anything. You just sort of swoop around it and be gone, and there you are, safe as can be.
I'll be darned. That's very cool. All right. Well, hey, guys, I'm going to jet off here. I think we're going to jump into a break real quick, and then I'm going to zip off for a quick interview, actually, on another AM station down in Colorado Springs for our upcoming expo, and I'll try and catch you back. If I don't, hey, I really appreciate you being on here, Dave, and we'll go from there.
All righty.
We'll start with break two,
Yeah, stay with us. We're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back from the break, you and I will continue. And hey, good luck with your interview, Colorado.
Thanks. Take care, guys.
All right, let's go to break.
See you soon.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at goberkey.com. That's goberkey.com today.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's E-N-E-R-F-O-O-D.com, enerfood.com.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
You're back with Backwoods Home Self-Reliance Exposed. We have David Lee on with us. You back, David?
I'm here.
Hey, how are you?
Well,
thanks
I'm
for
fine.
Coming back. Good, good, good. So we lost Colorado Ron, which is okay. He's going to go over there and try to talk up our expo a little bit. And now I can kind of corner you a little bit because I have a couple of questions that, you know, and a situation that I think you might find interesting. So, you know, I live in a little small town in Iowa. You know, population zero. I mean, it's you know, our entire county I think is less than 10,000 people, and you know. We moved up here because my wife grew up here, and she wanted her kids to – I travel a lot, and so she wanted to be around her family and wanted to go to the local school system. And, you know, there's a small daycare here that has been around for several years and because the school system didn't have a daycare, pre-kindergarten. And the city or the town that we live in decided to – they wanted to push a bond to get a small daycare going, and they actually got the lady who owns this other daycare to back the bond and promote it because they said that they would allow her to have some of the new building to continue to run her daycare there as well. And now that the bond is passed and it's been built, they have come up with every rule and regulation they can come up with. A, that she cannot move into the school because they want to expand their program for more money. But number two is every facility in town that she's looked at, they've gotten the city council to find reasons why that building is not good for the kids. And so she, you know, basically they've knocked her out of business after they got her to support the program. So, you know, it's another case of, the government rules can change. I mean, up to before when they needed her, it was like, oh, you didn't have to have this watering. So they didn't. Any of the things that they're telling her now didn't exist. But now any building that she looks at, the new rules that they want to instate for her to be able to use the building are just astronomically expensive.
Sure.
And so they've been able to manage a business out through building codes.
Exactly. Well, this is the itchy thing I have to deal with too, because that's exactly what's happening. And the intent of building codes was to make buildings safe for people and you know, for their health and welfare and so on. But what's actually going on there is the government taking control of every building in the country and making people pay dearly to have them. And what's happening there, to meet these building codes also, I don't know if you've gotten to this extent yet, is that you're going to have to use licensed contractors to do all the work. Have you hit that part of it yet?
Well, not with that specifically, but you know, I own the house that I have is, like I said, a house that's built in the 1800s, and I originally bought, and it belonged to my brother-in-law. We ended up, we had bought the property across the street from them, and it's just shy of 3 acres, and it had an old house on it that was, again, built in the 1800s. And unfortunately, the foundation was bad. But additionally, the sewer system had cracked, and then it had a cistern and a well on it. And originally, we were told that from the person who owned the house, it was like they were told it was about $50,000 worth of repairs to get the house completely up. But when we decided that we bought the property and we were going to move in, that almost tripled because
the well had to be filled in, the cistern had to be caved in and filled, and that pipe had to be replaced, and it all had to be done by state-certified contractors at an astronomical fee. And it was like, and I kid you not, like $10,000 to have them come and backfill a well and do this stuff, because they were the inspectors and they're the only ones that can do it. And I'm like, all you have to do is pour concrete in it. How difficult is that?
So, well, here's where the politics comes into it. And this is how the control is done, and this is why one of the reasons why houses are so expensive is because if you had been able to say go out and bid that job out to just anybody who could do it, think how much less it would be. But contractors make a lot of money. Their hourly expenses are high. It's getting scary here because government and contractors in your area sort of work together.
Mm-hmm.
And when the building inspector comes and says, yes, you have to fill in that cistern, and yes, you have to have a different well, and then the next step is, yes, you're going to have to do it, have somebody do it that's licensed, then it's expensive.
Right. It's been a process up here, and I've noticed it, David, that when we first moved up here at the middle of last year, they had just passed a regulation where to do anything with plumbing or electrical, anything, first of all, anything in your house other than plugging in a light, you know, changing out an outlet, doing any sort of new electrical wiring, putting in new light fixtures or things like that, have to be done by a licensed person now.
Exactly.
And anything, putting in a water heater, you have to have a licensed plumber. So that was the first step. And then 5 months later, they went and basically said that you were only, you know, if you were a handyman, you no longer could work under the handyman status. You had to actually go and be licensed by the state for plumbing or electrical if you're going to do either one of those things.
Right.
And that, which was very expensive for, and put a lot of these old guys who have been doing this for 20, 30 years out of business. And then they said, oh, by the way, you actually have to have a contractor's license to do any major construction. And major construction, the term was very loose, to do that. So basically they've now licensed every handyman task out.
Yes, they have. And it's also very soon going to be any masonry that's done at your place going to have to be done by a licensed mason. And get this, if you want to design your own house, you have to be a licensed architect. You know, if you want to design where the windows are going in a wall or something, it's just crazy. As I say, it's sneaking up on people, because if people are finding this out just as you have, you know, would they allow it? Of course not. I've been trying to think of some way to fight this, because actually it sort of puts me out of business too, because I don't want to be licensed. I don't want to be a contractor of any kind. I just want to build nice houses and for people and myself. I have had one thought. What kind of town system do you have there? Is it, do you have a mayor or selectmen or that sort of thing?
No, we have a mayor.
Okay. Do you have town meetings so the citizens can actually suggest changes to the government?
We do.
Okay.
In town meeting.
Well, we have that here, too. And what I've been considering doing is just going there and getting one thing changed, and that would be that if they're coming to, if it's a private home and they want to do an inspection and so on, let them do the inspection. Let them write up what they think is wrong. But then the owner decides whether he wants these things done or not and who does them.
Mm-hmm.
So they can do their inspections, they can recommend that it be done by licensed people and all that stuff, but the owner of this private property, which you're supposed to be able to control, still has the last say. I don't know if it would work, probably not, but that's the way it is.
Yeah, my concern would be it's a slippery slope. And you know, what I found when we got up here, and my father-in-law, you know, was, you know, everybody in Iowa, and heck, where I come from, everybody in Texas for the most part, takes government subsidies. You know, they have the CRP programs. I don't know if you have that in Maine, which is Conservation Restoration Program. They basically pay you to allow the property to go wild again, you know, for habitat.
And we have that up here for the woods, yes. Yeah.
Right.
And so a lot of people do this, and one of the stipulations when you take that money for the 5 or 7 or 10 years or whatever it is that you're taking it for, and it's always in fine print, is that the government has the by taking that money, the government has the right to come onto your property and inspect it at any time under the guise that they're making sure that you're using the property correctly under the premise of you that you're taking the money, which is you're letting it just grow wild. But any property that's adjoining it that physically touches that you own, not just so if I give, let's say, 50 acres in the CRP, but I own 500 acres, they can walk the whole 500 acres that's attached to that and inspect it.
Word.
Now, the other thing is they say that giving you that money, if in an emergency the government needs to manage your property for what's deemed a state or federal emergency, that they have the right to do so. And for years, everybody's just been going because there's never been anything that happened. But last year, last spring, in Nebraska and Iowa, we had a flooding situation on the Platte River. And what the government decided to do is they thought that there was a chance that the dams would break getting out there towards Kansas. And so instead of allowing that to happen, they didn't give any of the farmers any say in it. They basically allowed the river, they broke the dams north and allowed all the farmland to flood. And, you know, it was in all the papers and everything else, all the flooding and all the farms that were underwater and everything else, because they tried to save the city by flooding the farmers. And the farmers had no right to apply for federal grants or anything, because the government was able to do that under the guise of, this was an emergency, and you said we could use your land in an emergency, and so we flooded it. And so they'd already received their money for the CRP. They don't get it back for the farm problem.
Oh, my.
So my issues with things like although it was a good suggestion, is, you know, once you let them in, they seem to find a way to morph that into like a half a dozen other things.
Exactly right. That's the whole deal, is it just move in and take over everything. I don't know. It seems outrageous to me. I mentioned earlier living on a boat, and one of the things about living on a boat is you can get out of the way. But in the long run, what are we going to do? I mean, this country has been taken over by bureaucrats and politicians, and that's where the fight has to go. We have to stop that somehow. And I'm pessimistic about it actually happening, because, you know, look how crazy the world has become. But you know, right down to your personal home, that's my expertise. Again, it's just knowledge. I don't want to say anything that's going to get Homeland Security here, but sometimes you have to sort of ignore things like permits.
Right. Well, here's what I wanted to ask you. Maybe you could help me out. So here's my plan. I agree with you. I am a person, I hate when if people ask me to do something, I'm more likely to do it. When people tell me I have to do something, I usually do the exact opposite.
Okay.
It's a horrible thing.
That's the spirit.
For business, obviously. You know, but, all right, so I have this property across the street, and we're actually going to meet with the owner, the poor lady. You know, she's been supporting this community for multiple years, taking care of people's children and everything else, because we didn't have a preschool. Now she's basically being kicked out of business. And so here, my thought was, and here's where I could use your help, we were going to tear down this old house across the street anyway, because we can't, it's falling apart, and we'd rather, the woodwork inside is beautiful, and so we were going to go ahead and try to disassemble as much of it as we could, and then we have that almost two and three quarter acres across the street, which we kind of use as our farm. You know, we live across the street, and then we have our chickens and everything over there. But what I was going to do is I was going to offer to this lady free of charge that what we would do is they have to help us do it, but we'll get the community involved. We'll disassemble the building across the street, level it, build a new building there, like an old one-story schoolhouse, you know, 2,000 square feet or less, you know, two bathrooms, a big main room for the kids to do their schoolwork and everything else in, and, you know, in a small kitchen in the back.
And I would let her have it for the next 5 to 8 years free of charge, so that way she can have her school. And we'll build it as simple as we can, so we're not dealing with lots and lots of codes. You know, the more complex you have the house, the more things, that my belief is, the more things they can find to try to hit you on code violations. If you're talking about a structure that's basically beams and walls and things like that, it's hard to not make your code, as long as it's structurally sound, I would think. Is that accurate?
Yes and no. Codes will be a problem all the way along, but I think maybe your best bet there would be, have you seen these modular homes? I'm sure they have them out there, and the Amish build them, actually. Something like that might work, because those are to code right from the factory. They go up fast, and they're relatively inexpensive. And right now, with the economy so bad, there are some really good deals on modular structures. I'd look into that first.
Okay. All right.
They come with bathrooms. They come with the wiring already in. They go up very fast, and as I say, there are good deals on them now. So I'd look into that first thing.
Okay. But what we basically want to do is we want to beat them at their own game, because what they can do is, the city, every time they look at another building, can say, oh, well, you got to get this up to code, you got to do this, you got to do that, and keep changing everything. And if we go ahead and build the structure and they already approve it to code, and then we allow her to go in there and then to kind of give it back to the school system, what we're going to do is, the money that she saves because she's not paying rent to these other facilities, I'm going to allow her to drop, allow her to drop her pricing, so that way that more people can participate in the school. But the third thing is we are going to make the preschool like an agricultural prepping preschool. So we're, not only do we use homeschool academic, basics for the school, but we're going to let the kids have run of the entire 2 acres to have rabbits and chickens and things like that. So as opposed to just like at the real school where all they do is, it's a preschool, they play, they learn to tie their shoes, over here the curriculum actually includes planting gardens and doing things like that. And basically just try to get parents to go ahead and see that there's another way that they can support the community without, tearing someone down and trying to, push another taxpaying citizen out of the business.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I think you certainly have good motives there. I keep thinking, when you say these things, you're going to run into the bureaucracy over and over again here. And
you're probably right, but if you don't fight the system, nothing's going to change.
Well, that's true, and the fight is where it has to start, I think. And like I say, here I'm having my own problems with the bureaucracy. I'm hesitating about building again and so on. And changing it is really hard, because it's been being pushed on us for so long and put into place that I'm not sure. We might need to have a active revolution here soon.
The building revolution.
Or the whole country, because, look at it from the broad view. The country is full of citizens, and for some, because of money and power, some of the citizens have decided they want to be in control of the rest of us and make us pay dearly for it. That's government. And it's so involved, and it's including a large percentage of the population of the country here. I don't know. it's depressing to think about, but we have to have some drastic changes in this country, and it comes right down to personal homes and personal life here, when the government can come in and start telling you what to do and what you can't do, and it's scary, isn't it?
It is, and, I hate people telling me, and I hate to lose, but I'd rather fight and lose and at least then lie down and not do anything. I think it's the Texas mentality. I get up here and it seems like everybody's complacent. They just, it's the way it is, and you just can't change things. And I'm like, well, that's the wrong attitude. I'd rather get a little bloody than have not stood up for something that I believe in.
Well, there you go. You might be able to take this fight to the local level. You must have a local newspaper. You start writing letters to the editor, start letting people know what's going on there, and you might be able to make some changes. I think towns still have some power to change this building code thing. It's coming down from the state and the federal government, of course, too, but you might be able to do something there, and at least it would feel good to fight it, wouldn't it?
Right, and I agree with you. I mean, you look at people like you, and my grandfather did construction. He actually worked for General Electric in their nuclear division, and when he retired from that, he opened a construction company and did that for the next 25 years. And he was a general contractor, was not licensed the entire time he was a contractor, but he always maintained insurance. So that way, if something did go wrong, we'll not only workman's comp, but insurance for the people in case something went wrong. Mm-hmm. And he never had a problem the entire time he did it. But under new rules and regulations, the man never would have been able to go back into business. I mean, he would have just basically, he would have had to have gotten all the licenses and everything else, and that's just not who he was. He would have, he liked doing his own thing. And why would cities, and I don't understand why cities and towns would want to take your livelihood away from you, but on top of that, take away taxpaying citizens' ability to help the community.
Well, it's for money and power. I mean, it's as simple as that. If they can control your home and also make you buy things for your home that make your home more expensive, then the taxes are higher. That's exactly where it goes, because, I mean, why should they care what you have in your own home or what you do with it? It's your place. It kind of boggles me too about why there are people that would want to do this, and it's just that. If your house is worth, say, $100,000, but to bring it up to code, you're going to have to put like $40,000 more into it. Now they come back and they assess your house at $140,000. The town makes more money. They get to hire more bureaucrats and have power over you. I don't understand that. Like what they're doing to you in your town. Why would they want, like you say, to screw over some citizens who are trying to do good? It doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and on top of that, I agree with you. I almost think the town wants to take over some of these old buildings because, I've bought several old houses over here when I first moved here, thinking that okay, I will be able to fix these up, but then they start throwing this literally to remove everything since they're built prior to 1950s or 60s. All these houses have asbestos. Because mm-hmm. all linoleum, everything, any linoleum or anything in that house has asbestos. Mm-hmm. The law states that we can't remove it. You actually have to hire a specialist to remove it.
Right.
And to remove the linoleum in a kitchen is going to cost you about $3,000 for someone
yes.
to come and remove it.
See, money and power. Yeah.
It's
ridiculous. And this money goes to contractors who have lobbyists in there making sure these laws get into place. Of course, you probably have lead paint in there too, right?
Oh yeah. And
okay,
so I can't burn down the buildings because they have lead paint in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't haul them to the dump. If I wanted to remove the stuff with the lead paint in there, I can't haul it to the dump. I have to pay. I want to say it's like $1,500 a load for them to for special handling.
Well,
their special handling is just taking it to a different hole. Yeah.
Okay, so
that's basically what it is.
Let's be radical here and think of this. I mean, what you have to escape is the money aspect of it, okay? They've got you pinned down, you own property. Now they've made all these rules. You're just going to have to keep giving them or their minions, the licensed contractors, more and more money just to survive, and they have control over you. So I'm thinking, okay, let's get back to how about a boat? How about a teepee? Something that can get out of the way, There are places in the world where they don't have codes. I mean, you'd still be under the federal and state jurisdiction. Even here in Maine, there are towns where there are no building codes in the town. You go to the town office and say, I want to build a house, and they'll say, okay, go for it. And you go and do it. But still, the state has building code, certain codes that you have to follow, and of course the federal government's getting more into this. So I don't know what to tell you except maybe don't own property anymore. Just go back to, I don't know, being a pirate maybe.
Well, well, my advice to the people out there listening, there's a couple things, and this is why we like having people like David on, is when you're going out and you're looking at property, do your research ahead of time. You know, if there's a building already on the property, find out if there's a moratorium on the building and if you can do any of the work yourself because the building already exists. Because any new structures, you will be following new codes. But luckily, there are still some states' codes that allow you that if the building already exists, you can do, and they'll tell you what you can do. You can do internal, you know, work inside the house and not have to get permits. But anything you add to the structure, do it, anything externally, you have to get permits. And you just have to know what you're getting into. And especially when you're looking at property, when it comes to things like water or, you know, cisterns and wells and water rights, don't go buy a piece of property and think that there's a river on it or a creek on it and that you have the ability to use that. You could find out that the water rights go to the state.
Mm-hmm.
And here's something that happened when a property I almost bought, and I got lucky and stopped before I purchased it. There was a really big cistern under the house. It was part out and part underneath the house. And the gentleman didn't have to follow the state regulations on backfilling it. But the second I purchased it, I had to immediately, before I moved in, I would have had a specialist come out and fill that thing, and it was $19,000 to have it done. So I would have had to pay $19,000 to have that, because it was part under the house, so they have to fill it and pump it, and had to do supposedly all these tests. We would have had to pay $19,000 before we could have even moved in as an extra cost for the house.
Mm-hmm.
So know what you're getting into, and know what the city and county and state regulations are before you move in, because the hidden cost may not be from that purchase of the land. The hidden cost may be on the things that you have to do prior to moving into the facility.
Yes. And, you know, there are other scary things going on here, too. These curly bulbs that they're coming out lately with mercury in them.
Mm-hmm.
We had an episode here in Maine when those first came out where a lady broke one, and the hazmat team had to come in and clean it up for $3,200. One bulb.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Texas was one of the states that we were lucky that said that they weren't going to go to that fluorescent, you know, mm-hmm. bulb. You know, they were still going to sell the incandescent. I'm one of those paranoid people that we were actually looking at buying several cases of the bulbs before they actually became illegal.
That's
ridiculous.
Well, this is another part of the building codes, too. Those are being phased out in favor of the new bulbs. In fact, this new residential building code, if you build your house and you put in incandescent bulbs, you won't get your occupancy permit. It has to be the curlicue bulbs or none at all. Well, I won't say none at all, but it has to be the curlicue bulbs.
That's ridiculous. Actually, we're becoming China. In China, you can't build anymore unless you're doing LED.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of like LEDs too, but they're monumentally expensive if you put them in your house. Another rumor I've heard as I cruise the web on these things is that the idea here is that the government is trying to discourage private homes for most people. They want people living in apartment buildings and so on because, you know, they're easier to control That's the aim, and that's exactly what happens in the socialist countries. There, Russia and China, we mentioned last week those apartment buildings they live in that are horrible. It's been done in this country. You see these housing developments, like there was a famous one called Cabrini Green.
Mm-hmm.
They're just awful places to live. You know, it's like living in prisons, and it's all comes down to what the government of this country is turning into, and that's got to be fixed.
I definitely agree.
And the tentacles of it are coming right down to the local level. This
Well, the fastest way to get government to take things over is to get down to the little people. Because the sooner you accept it and you don't do anything about it, the faster you lost control. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of the plan here, which is they slide these things in. People kind of go, well, it's not really affecting me right now. And then mm-hmm. it's up and done before they even know what happened.
Yeah.
And then go ahead.
Well, people who think that they're grandfathered in, you know, they own a home and they don't plan to sell it or anything, the day is coming when all homes are going to have to be inspected and brought up to code. No matter how long you've been living there, this is where it's headed.
Right. Oh, I agree. Well, hey, we have to go, David. I appreciate you coming on again and talking through this with us.
Well, I wish we had been on more positive subjects here, and so everybody would leave happy. But maybe next time we can do that.
Yeah. Well, you know something that we like. It's like I said, we like doing our show like just a couple of guys sitting around having a cup of coffee and talking about what's going on in the world. I think it's more educational to just kind of go with the flow sometimes than it is to stick with some sort of happy agenda. Life's not always happy.
That's the truth.
All right. Hey, well, thank
you,
my friend, for coming on. And we'll talk with you again soon. So we have David Lee. Check out his website, The Unruly Elf, www.unrulyelf.com. He does unconventional homes, and hope to talk to you again soon. And I definitely plan on taking a trip up to Maine to pop in and say hi sometime soon.
Excellent. We look forward
to
seeing you.
All right, take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, guys, what we're going to do is we're going to go to break here, and when we come back, we are going to meet my new best friend in the whole wide world, because I love her product, Jerry McFarlane, and I hope I'm saying her name correctly, and she has come out with a wonderful new product called Jarbox, and I just can't say enough about it. I'm very excited about having her on. I am just in love with this product. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll be on with Jerry.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas! Which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
Want to reduce your dependence on the electrical grid? Trying to save money on groceries? Preparing for a major power outage? We can help. Layman's is your source for everything you need for heat, food, light, and water when there is no power. Glenda Lehman Irvin here for Layman's in Kidron, Ohio. My father, Jay Lehman, founded our store in 1955 to serve the local Amish with non-electric appliances, tools, and houseware items. Today, through our website, laymans.com, a print catalog, and a retail store, we provide oil lamps, water pumps, wood stoves, canning supplies, and hand tools to customers all over the world. If you think it isn't made anymore, check with Lehman's before you give up. Visit laymans.com or call us at 1-877-438-5346 for a free catalog, or just stop by. We're located about an hour south of Cleveland.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsors. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. This is Bubba Da Vinci. Colorado Ron is off doing a radio interview on some AM station, being a big shot somewhere. So we are live with Jerry McFarlane. Is that correct, Jerry?
Yes, it is.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you, Bubba?
I'm doing great. Now, you are the CEO and creator of Jarbox. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is.
So, you know, I posted some photographs up this morning on Facebook, and I passed it around. I even sent the photographs to to Colorado Ron, whose wife his wife is a really big canner. And let me tell you, the response has been overwhelming. I've gotten questions like, where do I buy these? These are the coolest things I've ever seen. And it's kind of funny. You were popped up, and we'll kind of tell everybody a little bit of background. We were connected through one of your distributors who was coming to the event, and I guess they suggested to you that you may want to come to the event also. Is that accurate?
That is, and I'm so thankful.
and I'll tell you what. Do you think we can say? I think we can say the name of the company. It's My Patriot Supply. We've mentioned them on another show, so I'm just looking at my notes to make sure it's something I could actually say. So, mypatriotsupply.com, it's Matt over there. Matt's the president and CEO over there, right?
He is. Matt's awesome.
Okay. Yeah, and Matt was a good guy. He called me up on the phone and said, "Hey, Scott, you know, sorry, he's my real name, Bubba. I don't typically use my real name on the show, although I think everybody knows it in the audience, but... and said, I've got this great company that is just starting out, and we're going to be distributing for them, and we'd like to have them come and participate. And I said, okay. And he sent me a link and said, you know, here's Jerry's contact information, and take a look at the product. And let me tell you, I was just I was like most excited I've been in such a long time, because. It just seemed – I love simple concepts that look like they're going to be successful. And
thank you.
And I saw your stuff. So tell me – I got messages popping up here. We have Cheryl Jordan just popped up and said made a comment about it too, and she's that everybody seems to like your product. So this is good. See, we're getting exposure for you on already. Tell us how you came up with this idea. I'm assuming you're a canner. Please don't say you aren't, because that would be really embarrassing if I'm sitting there promoting it and you find out you don't even can.
It would be almost as embarrassing as admitting that I stood in front of the mirror and said, "Do not say his real name," for 5 minutes before the show.
And then I do. So there you go.
Oh, you know what? It just made me feel that much better. Well, I don't think I'm alone in my experience with canning. I love canning. We hunt, we fish, we garden, we buy peaches from the Lions. You know, every year we have this tradition. And the one thing that was my major frustration was storage. It's just been years, and I go out to grab my jars, you know, full, unused, or empty, and find them in every sort of condition you could imagine. I just cardboard is cardboard, and it has its limitations, and shelving has its limitations. Nothing did everything that I needed to have happen for my jars, to protect them, to keep them clean, to organize them, to be able to move them fast, and it just got overwhelming one day. I went out there, and I'll tell you the straw that broke the camel's back. I don't think I'll be alone in this one either. We live in Wyoming, and we live in the middle of nowhere in Wyoming, so that's like two times middle of nowhere x two. And so we have mice and moths that migrate and all kinds of fun things. And I was under the house, under there getting my jars to get ready for cleaning them up. You know, mom's coming up for the summer. We're going to have a blast. We're going to can. And under the house at that time was not a stand-up kind of under the house. It's kind of one of those you're bending over, and it's a dirt floor kind of the bottom of the under the house. It with one string, with one light bulb that is always burnt out. I don't know how that happens, but so I'm under there, bent over, trying to find the jar box that I wanted. You know, I'm like, no, that's not it. Finally, I find it. You know, I have my little string. I pull my light bulb, and I go up, and I reach up and put it through the hole, so now it's sitting on the floor up above, you know, and I climb back out of the hole, and I grab the box, and I'm happy that I've got my jars, and I take them out to the yard, and I just get out the door, thankfully, and the bottom falls out. And as the bottom falls out, three mice run, and I have two heelers The dogs chase the mice and kill them immediately. That's what healers do, and bring them back to me as a gift. And all my jars are on the ground broken, and I'm standing there with a box with dead mice, happy dogs, and broken jars. And that was it. I was just like, you know what? I can't take this anymore. There's got to be something we can do. There has to be something we can do. I just can't do it. And I'm a thrifty person, so I went to my husband. I said, Jim, I know you really like these canned foods that we have, and I love producing them, and this is just, something's got to change. And he says, well, he says, just buy something. I don't care what it is. Just buy something. Just you know, this just is too much. We're done. And so I said, all right. So I started looking for something, and I looked and looked and looked, and I searched the Internet, and I went to all the stores in Riverton, which is two, you know, and tried to find something that could do what I needed it to do, and there just wasn't anything out there. So it was make something. And, you know, that sounds kind of strange, but when there isn't anything, I'm like, all right. So my mom was here, and I said, what are we going to do? And it just so happens, and you would hardly believe this, because I hardly believed it, but in Riverton, Wyoming, we have a plastic injection molding company. It's called Legacy Molding. And the guy happens to be a friend of ours as well. So I went, and I sat down at the table, the big, like, corporate table thingy, and I'm not a corporate person. Well, I guess I am now, but I don't look like one. And so I'm sitting there in my time of need, and I say, okay, guys, and they're all ready for some, you know, big announcement. I need a jar box. And they just looked at me. So that's kind of how it started right there.
Well, that's very cool. And you know, I, you know, it's kind of a similar tale to, not completely, but to Tatler, who is another small company, and hopefully you were going to get a chance to meet Brad at our event. He's a fantastic person. His father invented the Tatler lid. And same sort of thing, which is family just get tired of spending money over and over again on lids that you have to throw away because you can't reuse them a second time. And then just putting some ingenuity into it and everything else is a small family business, and now it's massive. And I'm like I said, I'm very excited. We took your product, and I shot pictures of it and stacked it up on a shelf with jars inside it, and I put the lids on one and connected it, and then put the other one on there. And my problem is, and we're just starting out. My wife's family all cans. My wife doesn't can yet. We just bought all the stuff this year. It's going to be her first year canning, but I love canned product. And so I either steal it from the relatives, or I'm one of those guys that goes to all the local Amish stores and everything else and buys all kinds of canned product. and my problem is when we put it on our shelves down in our basement, and you can build shelves, you can do whatever, you can't stack on top of it, and you jury-rig something, piece of plywood or cardboard between them and everything else. I am the clumsiest oaf in the world. I mean, I can't walk down the stairs without, you know, tripping or doing something. And as a habit, when I'm downstairs, I always grab onto things. And when I don't know how many times I've grabbed onto shelves that have jars on them, and that little shake starts the whole thing moving. And I don't know how many jars have broken because you can't stack them properly. And it doesn't take much to knock these things down. I have tons and tons and tons of friends and family that all have the same sort of shelving. You know, that, you know, it's old wooden shelving that you put your stuff on, you have for years.
Right.
And then, I kid you not, I go to auctions probably once a month, and I agree with you. I always end up with boxes full of empty jars.
Yep.
Yeah, and I usually buy them for the family members.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not cheap. You know, it's actually heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking when you break an empty jar. But when you have that, when you're down to your last jar of pickles or your last jar of sauce or whatever it is, and then it breaks because it's not stacked properly or things like that, you know, you'd almost pay anything at that moment, you know, to have something that that wouldn't have allowed that to happen.
Right. It is heartbreaking. You know, you have harvested in whatever way you harvest. You know, you've grown it and babied it and protected it from the grasshoppers and everything else, and you have it and you bring it in and you clean it and you prepare it, and you've prepared your jars and you've prepared everything you can, and it's a family event, it's a fun thing, it's a science project, it's all those things, and then to lose it, it is heartbreaking, and it is expensive. I've never even dared to try and figure out, what if you put, money and time as an issue here, what have you really lost? I don't even want to know, actually. It's like, oh, no. You can just feel that sinking. And especially, like you're saying, if it's something out on your shelves or you pick up the box and if you don't know a jar has leaked or, if a mouse has moved in and chewed the corner out or, your cat had to live in the garage because it was 45 below for, 3 weeks. Oh, wait, that's Wyoming again. and he's decided to scratch the side of the box up, because he loves you. And that's his way he shows it. And you just lose it, and it's gone. And there's nothing you can do. You can stare at it, and then you have the mess on top of it. And then, it's like, all right, do I wait for it to dry up? Do I pick up the big piece? I mean, it's just, yeah, we've all been there. Anyone that has jars of anything has been there, and it's awful. I'm with you. I'm with you.
Well, and I'll tell you, another thing that we tested last night. I went over to my brother-in-law Jim and sister-in-law Shayla's, and Shayla is the perfect wife. She is the major prepper. She cans every year, and I'm talking cans a ton. And she keeps everything all neat and everything else. So we were talking, they just moved to a 20-acre farmstead, and they were talking about all the materials, all the canning they lost, because when you pack full jars up and put them in boxes, and then you're moving them, all the bouncing around will break some of the seals.
Yeah, they will.
Yeah, and so you have to eat that stuff up instantly. So we put a bunch of jars inside your cases last night and sealed it up and did everything else. And I show it in the pictures of the stuff stacked up there. We sealed them up and bounced them around and everything else. Because they're not bouncing glass against glass and there's actually an air pocket around them, they're not getting it. There's no pressure to not. I mean, I'm sure you could probably still knock the lids out there, but this is a lot better for transportation.
You'd really have to get in it to try and knock them off. You're right.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, and you also, for convenience, I don't know if it was on accident or purpose, you added holes along the sides so you could zip tie them so the lids couldn't pop off.
Yeah, I did. And moving, we have moved a lot. That's another one of those things I don't care to count. And honestly, I would just give my stuff away because of that. You know without a doubt that you're going to lose them. I mean, maybe not 100%, but a percentage that's enough to take note of and to say, oh, I can't. Why didn't I just give these to my neighbor? If the fourth box up happens to have damage and it trickles down effect to the boxes underneath, then you're in double jeopardy again, and you just lose them. In fact, moving transportation is the main reason that I put those. I call them a half moon and a hole because I'm really official like that. That's my scientific name for it. The half moon hole feature. For transportation, when you're full like that, you can, and you've experienced this now that you've had them, when you stack them, they're fast to locate. They snap into place, and they're designed to stack, and that was for moving and transporting and actually storing without needing to have shelves. But those little zip tie holes, and people have used twisty ties, shoelaces, paracord, yarn, anything you have laying around. I tried to make them so that you don't have to buy a bunch of accessories to go with. It's gonna, mm-hmm. whatever you have to accommodate will work here. But once you secure those and you have your jars in there, like you said, those cells, and for people that haven't seen these, and maybe they'll jump on my website, but those little cells.
And we posted it up on Facebook and on our chat, so everybody's seeing it live.
Oh, great. Thank you. They're designed where you cannot have jar-to-jar contact. You can shake them upside down. You can shake them side to side. and they will not contact each other with the lid in place. Now, if you use it just as a tote, of course, you can, you know, they're free flying in there, and you can knock them down if you really try. But if you put the lid on it and it's in a jar box for transportation, that's absolutely our number one way to do that. They're secure. You can take those. You know what we do? We stack them up in our trailer, and we have those tie-downs that you can ratchet that you use to tie down your four-wheelers and things like that on trailers, or small ones, and you can just have a C-clamp, at the bottom, C-clamp up on the top, and just ratchet them down. And you could dump your whole trailer over, and those things are going to be safe because they can't touch jar to jar. And so that's another reason that we added that feature, so that you can secure them. You can secure them to a wall. You can secure them to each other. You can do top-to-top. You can put them in your root cellar. And I had a lady from Eureka, California, email me, and, you know, there's a seismic area over there, and she was just pleased as punch that she didn't have to worry about it. They have continual, you know, small tremors that nothing, you know, she wouldn't even put her jars up on a shelf because of that. So she was really pleased that you can secure them and keep them tied down and taken care of that way.
Well, let me give a testimonial, and I did it earlier, but I wanted to make it for people that weren't listening earlier. You know, we talked a couple days ago, and I wanted to get some of these, so I like to always make sure before we bring someone on that, if possible, we test the product, and good, bad, and indifferent. We usually give the good and the bad, and I'll be honest with you guys so far, and I'll tell you guys the only bad I found here in a minute, that we like to do it live, so we get their expression. Jerry goes, yeah, it's good radio, but I'm kidding. Jerry volunteered to cover the FedEx, to send them to me overnight with jars in it. And anybody that has ever ordered anything, FedEx or UPS overnight, and I'll tell you what, when I was in school, I worked for UPS as a loader for a summer. And how many times a box at UPS or FedEx gets thrown and stepped on and everything else is amazing. I'm surprised any product ever gets any place in one piece. So when she said she was going to send me the jar boxes with jars in them, 1-quart bulb jars inside them, I swear on a stack of Bibles that I assumed what I was going to be getting is a box full of glass that I was going to have to dump out to get there. Because how the heck is somebody going to send something overnight FedEx? And it's a big box, you know, with stuff getting thrown around with jars in it, and not expect at least a broken jar. I will tell you right now, again, hand the Bible, we did not have a single broken jar on a 24-hour FedEx shipping. That, to me, that's testimonial right there. Guys, if you come to the event, if you go to our website, everything else, right there is the reason to buy this stuff, because that is just flat out amazing that those jars got to us and didn't have a single broken jar. So congratulations, Jerry. That's just fantastic.
I was a little nervous, Bubba. I'm like, all right, we got a guy to test on here. He'll let me do it. Of course, I kind of said, hey, guess what I did? I should have asked first. You're like, alrighty.
I think you can tell everybody honestly, when you said that you were going to do it, there was like a big pause, and I'm like,
there
okay.
There was a big pause, and really what I talked to you maybe once before that. I'm
yeah.
Like, well, we'll just take a liberty here and pretend like we're pals.
Yeah. So, hey, Ron, are you on? I just saw over here that you're on live.
I am on. I slipped in. How you doing?
Hey, Colorado. So, Jerry, this is Colorado Ron. Ron, this is Jerry. She's the CEO of Jarbox. So,
very
how was your
cool
radio
product?
Thank you.
Very. The radio show went good. So, talked to me for about 20 minutes about the expo coming up. So, yeah, everything went good over there, and I just thought I'd slip back in because I really wanted to learn more about this product. So,
great, thanks. I'm looking forward.
And I was
to
telling
that.
Her,
oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, I was telling her that your wife is our right now in our group is our big canner.
She does do a lot of canning, that's for sure. And I'm got to admit that it's your fault that I'm back, because I was going to play hooky and just slip out for the rest of the show. But I really, really wanted to learn about this product. So your fault that I had to come back. Dang it. But
should I be apologizing?
No, it's another testimonial
really.
To the
welcome
to the,
back.
Yeah, a testimonial to your product. So good for you.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, I actually showed it to my wife this morning, and she was like, "Oh, now that's cool." She goes, because just was it probably 2 or 3 days ago, I was down in the basement. Now, this is no lie. We're down in the basement. You know, of course, you got all your cans. You're getting ready for canning and all that stuff. And, you know, we're kind of trying to move jars around and stuff. And one section of our basement is just full of these empty boxes. They're, I don't know, they look like they're 50 years old because they're all flapping and parts are falling off of them. And half of them are, you know, waterlogged. It looked like they've been waterlogged at one time or another. And we've taped them up, I don't know how many times, trying to keep them all organized. And they just take up so much space. And they look like crap. You know, it's just all piled mess.
A bunch of mixed matched
boxes.
That.
That's right. That's right. And so I was like, oh, man, I showed her the product. And how cool would that be to be able to just stack them, especially when they're empty, just to stack them up in the corner, and it wouldn't take up any space at all compared to the canning, you know, jar boxes that we have now. So
yeah, they
that's
were
really
designed
cool.
to nest, and a lot of it was to save space because we do have the same thing. I'm telling you, the boxes that I used to have probably qualify for some kind of ownership in duct tape, the whole industry, and markers too. I have scratched off and rewritten, you know, permanent marker on all the boxes till some of them are older than my children, and I've, my oldest
yep.
daughter's 28. So if that tells you anything, but
yep.
they just pile up. They do, and nesting it. You know, I was looking. I asked Rob. He's the manufacturer and engineer that I work with at Legacy Molding here in Riverton. And I asked him yesterday. I said, you know, could you just look up the date on when we started working on this? Because I need to know how long it takes to reinvent the box. And he kind of laughed. And we started this back in June 2010. So in the meantime, you know, trying to, and I cheated because, you know, of course we had prototypes, so I've been kind of moving them into my storage a little at a time and getting rid of my boxes that have the water logged and beet juice logged and every other kind of thing that's on there. But it's exactly true. Nesting, we have a lot of things in our garage and in our pod and those types of things, you know, hopefully preparedness things to for more than one type of situation. So empty cardboard boxes that were just, you know, halfway full of some kind of jars, pints, quarts, who knows what, old washcloths and T-shirts and newspaper, whatever else you can stuff in between them. It took a ton of room. And so with the ones you have, you probably saw that it only takes about, it's a little less than an inch of space in between each one nested. So that was
nice.
To help that, and also to help with, you know, shipping and moving them and trying to get them out to people. We're really trying to make it as efficient as we can as well.
Well, and the other thing, and I'm sure you've touched on this, but sorry I missed part of the interview, but, you know, I never can trust my labels on my boxes because there's like 50 different labels on my boxes, and so I'm always opening them up anyway just to double check, even though I'm pretty sure it's spaghetti sauce. I'm not sure, so let me open it and look just to make sure. And these are so cool because they're see-through, so you can actually see what's in there, and you don't have to sit there and keep opening them up or labeling everything, and I love that aspect of it.
Oh, thank you. That was actually, we ran back in December, we ran kind of a beta run to see, you know, to get it out a few samples and see what people would say. And that material at that time, it's a polypropylene product that we work with, and you have upwards of 10,000 to choose from. So there's a lot of variance in principle with each one that you use. And so the one that we chose, we added a talc filler, a mineral filler to it, to get that rigidity that we needed. And in doing so, it made the materials came out opaque, so you couldn't see through it. And a lot of people, I bet you at least 80% of the people that tried the product said, man, I wish I could see through it. So same thing, we went back to the drawing board, and it took us a couple months, but we finally found the right combination of a homopolymer and a copolymer combination to where we still have that rigidity that we need to carry the weight of the jars, but we also have the flexibility so that the clasps work well, and then you can see through it. It's a semi-transparent. So it was really, I give my engineers kudos for that one, because they were able to guide us into a material that did all those things for us. So I appreciate the input on that.
Do you mind if I ask a question real quick, Ron?
Go for it.
Okay. So, you know, Jerry, I want to kind of point out, so if you don't have any engineering or corporate experience, correct?
No, I don't.
and what's been your profession for the last, for last 10 years, say?
I've worked in dentistry for the last 20-some-odd years. Since I already told you how old my oldest daughter is, I'm okay saying that.
Okay. So, and this is what I like about the preparedness, self-reliant industry, is here's a person who has no corporate experience, has never been the CEO of a company, has never run a big business or things like that, and you're not an engineer. And you know, all of a sudden, you're here on a radio show with us with a brand new product, talking about polymer. I mean, just listening to the words you're using and the descriptions, you know, are you surprised at where you're at by doing this? How's the transition been for you?
I am surprised, and there were a lot of transitions. Like you said, engineering is fascinating, and I've never really, you know, there are principles and things in dentistry, but I've learned those over the years. You can't help but learn what you're doing, and being working hand in hand with the engineers and the software, and learning, you know, different draws and what one little rib will do, and how much freedom you have in engineering and plastics. And this is a plastic injection molding, so, you know, there are certain things, because this is one mold, you know, trying to keep the cost down. We engineered it from 7 pieces down to 1, which is watching the process and learning about it. It's phenomenal. It's a whole other world. And I tell people it's like having a new profession at 29, you know, but then the whole daughter being 28, you know, I blow my own mouth out of the But it is fascinating. And I appreciate the process is amazing, and I'll tell you a story about that. We, when I first went in, and everyone got their eyebrows off of the ceiling from me saying I wanted a jar box, they just, you know, I kind of lost a lot of people. When I explained what it was, you know, their first assumption, well, there has to be something out there already, and they didn't admit that to me until about a month later when they did their own searches. So, excuse me. So, they warned me. You know, engineers have a mindset that nothing is ever done, and they convinced me of that, because we started off on the process, and Rob said, "Now look, you know, I want you to know that when we have a product design, and we're working with the inventor, it usually takes about 13 revisions before you come to an endpoint, you know, where you say, okay, this is what I want. This is good. Let's go." And so I had that in the back of my mind. And as I began to get excited about the process, and I'd have another idea, you know, driving down the road on the way to the shop, or, you know, hey, my mom is an RVer, so how can I make this, you know, the hole and half moon thing, you know, how can I help them secure them so when they're driving they don't lose their cans and jars, and they put all kinds of stuff in here, even food storage. A lot of people do, but that's another topic. So I kept wanting to do things to it to make it, you know, do as much as I can to make it as convenient, take away as many frustrations as I possibly could for other people that do what I do. And so at 24 revisions, Rob said, "Jerry, you have to stop." he said, overdone the engineers here. And I'm like, okay. He said, if you don't stop, you know, making revisions to it, it's going to be a car. All right, okay.
All right, guys, we've got to take a break. Jerry, can you hang tight with us for after the break so we can keep going?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. All right, we are going to take a couple-minute break here, guys, top of the hour, and we'll be back with Jerry from Jarbox as soon as we get back. Thanks.
You're listening to the Preparedness Radio Network. We'll be back after a word from our sponsor. Discover the taste of the sun. Thousands of preppers have acquired a sun oven to have on hand in the event of an emergency and have been pleasantly surprised by the improved taste of sun-cooked foods. Sun ovens are a preparedness item you can start using today. A sun oven will pay for itself by reducing your utility bills and by keeping your house cooler in the summer. Food can be baked, boiled, or steamed at temperatures of 360 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit with the power of the sun. Sun ovens are often confused with homemade solar cookers, but they get considerably hotter, cook food faster, and hold temperatures longer. Sun ovens fold up in seconds, carry like a suitcase, and have many innovative features which make them the ultimate solar appliance. For the past 25 years, sun ovens have been proudly made in the U.S. They are durable and have a long life and come with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. For a discount coupon, email preppers@sunoven.com. That's preppers@sunoven.com.
I'm Dr. Prepper, and I'm here today to tell you about the Wonder Mill. Their patented grain mills create the most luxurious and quality flours from any hard grains or beans. They contract with the world's best-suited factories to manufacture the Wonder Mill to the highest specifications in the industry that they plan and design right up there in Pocatello, Idaho. They are the only American company with both electric and hand-operated models. I like them so much, I bought both, and you should too. I use the electric model for the finest flour, and I use the hand-operated model for making my grits and creamy wheat for breakfast. And I can have it fresh every day. With the Wonder Mill's lifetime warranty and the fact that these are simply the world's fastest, quietest, cleanest operating grain mills, it's no wonder that most preparedness and kitchen professionals prefer the Wonder Mill over all the other grain mills on the market. I love both mine. I know you'll love yours too. Go to thewondermill.com. That's thewondermill.com and Wonder Mill Grain Grinders. Get yours today. Tell them the Dr. Prepper sent you, will you?
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Thanks for listening to a word from our sponsor. Now, back to the show on the Preparedness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Backwoods Home Magazine, Self-Reliance Exposed. We're in the home stretch, the last hour here. And we've got Colorado Ron back. This is Bubba DaVinci, and we are talking to the wonderfully inventive Jerry McFarland. She is the CEO and inventor of a product called Jarbox. You can find it at www.jarbox.com, or you can check it out on our Facebook page to see photographs of it. Thank you for coming back, Jerry.
Oh, you bet. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, you were just telling us a story. I want to move over to something a little more conventional on with this product.
you know, when you created it, you went through this massive, you know, process of you know, reinventing it. You know, when you put this thing together and you had your final product out and you started getting ready to ship, you know, how daunting was it to put this out to a population of people? Let's be quite honest, canning, women who can, or men, for those men out there that can, I don't know how many of you will admit it, but for the people, there we go, people who can, they are very set in their ways, and they are very, very, very opinionated. I mean, I have never met a more opinionated group. We, you know, at our events, we do lots of different things with canning groups and things like that, and you know, everybody has the right way to do things and the reason why this. Were you nervous about putting this product out there in what the it's genius in its simplicity and in its function, but were you worried about just what the general populace would say about your design and what's going out there? And how have you been with the responses that you've been getting?
Yeah, I was nervous. I still get nervous. I told you the other day I'm a little nervous about this. But you know what? When you're in research and development, or at least me, I don't know about, you know, in general, but I was so concerned about research and development, I didn't really even think that, hey, someday these are going to be for sale. You know, I was so in tune to trying to, you know, have the product do everything I could that I didn't even think about it. In fact, when it ran and we had our mold here and the machine was running and I saw them coming down the conveyor belt and I picked one up and I looked at it, yeah, I almost cried. I was like, now what do I do with it? You know? And they looked at me and they said, it's time for you to sell this now. And, you know, the first thing I thought was, I got to go home and get the rest of the boxes out of my garage. But it is. It's like... boy, it's like you have a baby and you love the baby and you think it's the cutest baby ever and you've spent time with this baby and here it is and then you go out in public and you show your baby to other people and you think, are they going to think my baby's cute too? when it's a project of yours like that, that's how I felt. I was like, wow, I guess just because I like it doesn't mean that everyone else is going to like it. So it does make you nervous, or it made me nervous anyway. And when I got my first email, and it was that lady I was telling you about from Eureka, when that was my first review, and when I got it, I jumped out of my chair. I went and got everybody, you know, at Legacy, and I had them come look at it, you know. And I said, look, she liked it, you know. And that, you know, that affirmation really made me feel good. And then I just started really taking it and showing it to people and getting their responses. And it, I'm just happy that people say this can help me. Yeah, that's the main thing. If that's what I'm about. If it's helping people, I'm a happy girl. So when people say, oh, I've been waiting for one of these, or oh gosh, I just moved and this will help me, you know, I won't lose any more of my jars, or those type of comments are invaluable to me. I can't even put words to it. That made it all worthwhile. All the time. It's expensive. You know, everything that we've done to kind of sacrifice to get it out there, just those kind of comments. And I love the, you know, when someone says it's awesome or something, it's huge. It's really beyond words. I'm just happy that it's helping people.
Well, now, I was on your website over the break, and we had a break over the top of the hour, and I was checking it out, and I got to admit, there's something there that freaked me out a little bit.
What's that?
you've got this thing listed. You've got a countdown clock for coming up to the Colorado Springs Expo. And it went from 13 days to 12 days because our expo starts at 10 o'clock on Friday.
So, no pressure, guys.
I'm like, oh, no.
Oh, my God. I just went to the website, too. Yeah, thanks. We've already been nervous enough. We've been talking about it this morning. You know.
If you want, I can email you just a direct link to the countdown.
Thanks.
Oh,
no pressure.
The pressure is on. Okay. Well, I want to know a little bit more about the ways you guys tested it to ensure that it wouldn't break. Well, obviously, overnighting it was a pretty good test, but I'm sure that your testing was a little bit more extensive than that.
Our testing has been really fun. You know, I have no lack of volunteers when I say, hey, guys, I'd like to try and break some jars. I mean, everybody just stops what they're doing. I want to throw the jar box, you know. And we've done a lot. And it has to do with the materials. And you know, we'll run some and then we'll test them. I think one of our favorites is we have this two-pound cannonball. If I didn't even know cannonballs came in a two-pound size, but they do. It's a historic relic that actually Rob found here in Wyoming, in Guernsey, Wyoming, which I'm sure you've all heard of.
Oh, of course. It's such a major metropolitan area.
Yeah. Actually, if you put us all together, I'm not sure you'd have a metropolitan area. But so we have this cannonball, and we have about a 3.5-foot tall tube that's just a little over the circumference of the cannonball. So we take it, and we take two totes, make a jar box out of it, we put it on the floor, and in the shop, all the floor is all concrete. There's no fluffiness to it anywhere. So we set it on there, and we put it right on the floor, and then we take that tube and we set it over each cell. So it's a jar box, so you've got where those little locator rings are, and we set that tube right on top of it, and then we stick that ball in the top, and we drop it. And we drop it and see what will happen. The material that we have now, we have had, let's see, out of 10, we've had zero breakage as far as dropping the cannonball. On one, I broke a corner on the third bounce. So I think we're doing pretty good. It bounces. It actually bounces. The cannonball goes back up in the tube, and we stand back. We don't wear goggles. We should. I shouldn't have said that. We're wearing goggles. and so we drop it, and I don't know what it is, but every time it hits, I wince as if it's going to break, and it doesn't, and then I'm a happy girl again. But that's one of our funnest ones, and we have people drop by the shop, just, you know, other people working on other projects and stuff, and we always go show them that test, and that's one of our fun ones. But we also take them, and we'll put jars in them, and, of course, we use jars with water because I have these peaches that I took down there when we first started the project, and they used to be, you know, peaches, and I have a little cinnamon stick in there. Now they're like peach sauce with a little broken up bark in it or something. I don't know what it is. We've shaken and stirred and spun, but the jars are all still intact. That's a good thing. So if you want to rotate your stuff for 2 years, I'll show you what it's going to look like. So we'll take jars with, you know, empty jars or jars filled with water, and Rob or Jim, Jim's my husband, you know, we'll get somebody to volunteer to stand there and drop them straight on the concrete. And last time we did that, we lost one jar and we lost one cell. And so if you're dropping them full of water or peaches or whatever else, we lost one. And we did it with cardboard and we lost everything. So I'm pretty impressed with those results. But we do all kinds of, we'll set it up on the top of the counter and walk by as if, you know, somebody, a kid or somebody might have knocked it off the table, and we'll knock it off the table. You know, we try to do all real life situations that we can to make sure that it's doing what we're designing it to do. So it's a good question about the testing. We've had a blast with that, and like I said, never short of volunteers. Now, I've had some people say, well, maybe you should take it up on top of the roof and, you know, have a crane. And so I'm going to admit we haven't gone that far yet. yeah.
So I like the official cannonball test. Have you videotaped that?
No, I haven't. I haven't done that yet, but I'd love to. I think it'd be pretty funny for everybody else to see what we're doing.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm always looking for an excuse to either go hunting or fishing in Wyoming. I love Wyoming. And so
great.
I'll see if I can schedule a find a hunting or fishing trip up there, and I'll come up and videotape it for Ron and our website and for our Facebook page.
Deal.
So,
that would be awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, you got to come see the shop. Yeah, I thought about doing some YouTubes, but I just learned how to do Facebook, and I'm not doing that real well. So
We're happy to help you out there, and Ron and I like taking trips, so we'll figure out a way to go ahead and do that. And I've been looking for an excuse to tell my wife I want to go do a $2,000 elk hunt, so now I just found it. So.
Hey, yeah, we might be able to set you up. You know, we are elk hunter people here. So
are you really?
We'll,
all right, there's
oh, yeah,
we got a deal.
Yeah.
We'll
oh, absolutely.
We'll talk. Tell your husband I'll get him to Iowa for a deer hunt if he'll get me up there for an elk hunt.
I bet that'll be a deal. He's probably listening in the other room, so now you're hooked.
So okay, so let's get to the next question, because this is exciting stuff. So how long have you been selling the product? Because you're actually coming to our event, and are you going to be selling the product at our event, or are you going to be taking orders? What are you going to be doing?
I'm going to ship down one pallet, so I'll have 250 jar boxes with me. I have on my website, Matt, which we talked about earlier, at mypatriotsupply.com, is offered to do a direct link for me. So he is going to, and he's on there now. So if I run out or don't have enough or whatever, then we can definitely just go jump right on the website. And Matt has a direct link under, I think we've got it, order your jar boxes here is what it's called. So they can definitely do that. I do have some retailers that will be coming up probably, if I look at their schedule here, I'm going to say for sure mid-June we should have some. The only thing is Colorado Springs I haven't got yet. I only had this on the market since about the middle of April. So I'm trying to line up retailers so people can just walk into the store and buy them with their other supplies. I don't know if it's okay to say where they're going to be or not, but that's on
their
website.
Sure, go ahead.
It's okay? Okay. Here locally in Riverton, they're actually at our Big R, so that's kind of a big variety store, lots of tack and outdoor things and stuff like that, and canning supplies, kitchen supplies, Ace Hardware. Also, coming soon to Smith's Grocery Stores, and they're out here mainly in the West. Macy's is also a grocery store mostly in the Utah Valley and in that area. Menards, which I think should be back kind of in the area where you are, Bubba, if you've heard of them. Lehman has us signed up. We're not in their catalog yet. They just ordered their pallet out a couple weeks ago, and I think that they're in their stores there. And then we have a store Idaho called D&B, and they have 11 locations, 2 in Oregon and 9 in Idaho. So I'm trying to get them
out
there.
That's great. Yeah.
That's for such a short period of time, that's pretty amazing.
I'm really humbled and very excited. I mean, I think they're, you know, they're giving me a shot. They're giving me a try to see if people want jar boxes and if they'll be helpful for them. And I'm just very humbled at it. I'm amazing. So thank you.
And you just so you, your question, you are open to other potential distributors and everything as well, right? Because we get a lot of companies. First of all, we have a lot of companies that come to our event that will probably want to talk to you. It's going to be like taking the prettiest girl to the prom. You know, everybody's going to be looking at her and going, "Hey, you know, can I come over and talk to your girl?" So
I hope they don't care if I wear a ponytail to the prom.
No. But you're still looking for distributors, because I mean, we have a lot of our partners that listen to the show and things like that. So we want to make sure that they get all excited as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm just starting out, so I'd love help. I just made a presentation last week here in Riverton to kind of economic development and Rotary, those type of people, and I ended the presentation with help me, tell me, give me your advice. You know, I just went from a service industry, things that came out of my heart and my hands, and that. Into having a product, you know, it's a thingy, it's a widget. They actually call them widgets. I'm like, it doesn't look like a widget to me, but whatever, it's a jar box. So I have, you know, a thing in my hand to promote and to show to people, and I'm just me. I'm little. I would love some help in getting it out there, just letting people know it even exists. I mean, how can you Google jar box if you don't even know there is one?
Right. Yeah, was this completely a self-started business, or did you have investors or anything like that, or did you do it all on your own, or how did that work out?
No investors, just me and my husband, my mom, us three basically. My husband has another job, and my mom lives in Arizona, so I've put the footwork into it and the time, but they're definitely part of my company. And we have everything's made in the United States. So I have my molds made back in Iowa. My designer, after we do the engineering here in Wyoming, is the designer's in Longmont, Colorado. And so he oversees our designs. Yeah, so everything's made here. We buy our plastics here. So it's all homegrown, all homemade, and hopefully useful to our home.
All right, so we have a question from the Gray Void, which is our chat room, and
okay.
they ask, do they have these to fit pint jars as well?
Oh, that's a good question. I have the steel purchased for the pint size mold, so it will be out this summer. The people that make the molds really don't have a schedule, which was kind of unusual to me. In dentistry, we have a schedule, and we're usually within just a few minutes of that if everything goes great. But these guys have kind of a you're in line sort of thing. And so, excuse me, it was difficult for me in the beginning. That was one of those transitions to not panic when I didn't. You said it was going to be here in 4 weeks, and now it's 4 weeks and one day. So, you know, we will have the pint size out this summer. We have a couple other designs that I'll either get out the end of this year or maybe beginning of next year. They're kind of surprises. But, you know, we had to start with the most traditional, the thing that the most people had to get it out to help the most people the fastest we could. You know, we kind of started feeling a sense of urgency just in our own preparedness to help people in this situation. We have things in our jar boxes that people have sent us recommendations, things that we just have picked up on our own. Anything that you want to keep clean and organized, you know, dry, you can get empty mayonnaise jars or, you know, the plastic ones and put all kinds of things in there. We have reloading components in it. We have fly tying stuff in it. We have, you know, medications that we want to keep dry and then put them in our jar boxes because we can foresee that, you know, there could be a possibility if you have a get out of Dodge kind of scenario, it might be raining, pouring rain, and you might have cardboard and it might not do you very well. You know, so we're just trying to think as much as we can to get these out to people as quickly as we can for all different sorts of reasons.
Okay, Ron, let me do one more so I can get this in. We have a Skype question, which is, it's more of a suggestion, it is what it is. They said, would it be possible for you to not only sell pint size, but to sell retrofitting kits for the quart side? And they said, a smaller tube that would fit inside the larger to slide the jars into. That's actually not a bad suggestion.
It's not a bad suggestion, and what we've done to have these accommodate as many sizes of jars as we can without taking away the protective abilities of it, keeping the jars from hitting each other is number one. We have all my jars, every jar I could get at the store, you know, every kind of sample we could get. Now, these aren't going to fit the tall, decorated, you know, whatever kind of out there jars, but for most of us, it's going to be, you know, 99% of our jars. We looked at some different retrofitting, and it may come in the future. The only problem with it was the keeping the jars safe and away from each other, and also impact, because we found that without that extra protection, we tried high-density foams, we tried a bunch of different things. So that's kind of still in development, but so far we haven't found a good way that is cost-effective and also will provide that protection. But we're definitely still, that's still out there, and we're still working on that. So at some time, you may be able to have, you know, one box that fits all with a retrofit. For now, we went to pints and quarts, and they fit almost everything that you've got in that size. But definitely a good suggestion and something that, that we have on the drawing board.
Well, you know, you got a good product when Skype, you know, our Facebook and Skype people and our other people are asking questions online. So I think you're,
I think you got
a hit here. So I interrupted you, Ron. Go ahead and ask your question.
Oh no, I was just going to say, you know, I just love how I was just looking at my storage room. It's a flipping mess.
Picks, we want picks.
And I'm just thinking, man, this would be so nice to get everything organized and neat and in line. You know, actually, we had somebody just post that the same thing. You know, he said got pint jars piled up everywhere. Yeah, so I mean, you know, need a solution for the mess is what the comment was. So, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, mine's a mess too. I got everything everywhere. I was just thinking about it because we were down there the other day. And
well, people put all kinds of things. They put their food storage, peanut butter, honey, pickles, you know, whatever, salad dressing. And I've had a bunch of people email me, and some of those pictures are on my website too, that we said, hey, that's a good idea, you know, because we get good ideas and love good ideas. Please send us good ideas. of what else people can do. And, you know, and if you want to be fancy, they're dishwasher safe. I wash them out with a hose. You know, but you can clean them. I dare you to take your power washer and clean your cardboard.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't work out real well.
No, it doesn't. And this is going to be so nice. I'm gonna get a ton of these when we get to the expo, because I gotta get my entire storage room organized. So this is gonna be great.
Awesome. Yeah, you know, I'm gonna run a special. I'm not gonna say what it is, but I am gonna have a special at the expo for people that are there. You know, I just, with all the suggestions, I thought, well, let's see how many I can get down there. And thankfully, you guys have set it up where I can ship right to the expo. That is. I appreciate that tons. I can take the dually down there and have a pallet in the back, but the wind resistance and me driving the dually, you know, without a trailer, what for? But yeah, people are using them for like little miniature greenhouses and stuff like that too. So it's just so exciting. I'm so thankful for people calling in, giving us ideas. And I had one suggestion for Ron. You know, when I go out there to try and find salsa in the cardboard when I had it, I always knew to look in the green bean box. I don't know if that helps you at all. But that's what my magic, I'm like, this is not salsa, green beans, that's where it's going to be.
That's exactly how I feel. It's like Christmas all over. You know, my wife canned, what was it? It was something that, anyway, it tasted just like pineapple. She did some special recipe I can't even remember what the vegetable was, but it tasted just like pineapple, and we loved it. And we have not been able to find it. She canned two entire boxes of it last year, and we ate one stinking jar, and I cannot find it. We've been through every box in the house. It's like, how did we lose two cases of pineapple? This is crazy. And
especially something you liked.
Yeah, it was something I liked. And it's like, I for some reason, I can always find the beans and stuff, but I can't ever find
right.
Can't find the good stuff. It's like, good grief. So,
well,
yeah,
the
this
nice
is,
thing
this
is, yeah, you can write right on the jar box with a Sharpie or whatever type of marker that you use, and then just with a little bit of Windex or WD-40 or whatever you're using to clean and a little bit of elbow grease, it comes right off, so you can write on it again. So,
huh. Hold on, that sounds like my cleaning plan. You got cleaning with WD-40?
Yeah. Just as a solvent, you know, come on, it's the chemistry thing again. In the shop, you will find ways to do stuff.
That's right. So, is there, besides the pint size, I mean, you're a brand new company.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have launched this by yourself. I mean, what's your goals and ambitions? I mean, is this a, you know, you want to take this and get this in every Walmart? You want to stay small and just try to be and believe it or not, we like Tatler. Tatler is a very successful, what we like to call a mom and pop business. You know,
yeah.
they don't want to necessarily grow to this massive size because then they're worried about, you know, when everybody's got their jar box or in their case their Tatler lids, what do you do with the company then? So they prefer to stay. To grow at a very steady pace. What's your ambitions, yours and your husband's?
Our main ambition is to keep it to where people can get it. And, you know, you'll hear stories about some corporations that just want to kind of stamp out the little guy, you know. And then we're cautious of that because I think that it can really be helpful. And we have a family of them designed, and without needing non-disclosures from everybody on the internet, because my attorney would wring my neck, you know, we do have other things planned in the same sort of realm to help people with their storage, with you know, things in their home. And so we'd like to keep the company, you know, these grocery stores and Smith's and Macy's and Menards, and, you know, we're so thankful because they will get out to a lot of people as far as, you know, someone coming in and selling them in mass quantities, kind of like Tatler, we're not sure. We're new, and we want to keep it where the value systems are in place, and not that big corporations don't have values, but you know what I mean? It's homegrown, and we have ambitions to keep it available to people and to keep it to where they can get it and affordable and to have it, you know, made in the United States. I mean, we have some things that are really important to us. So those are our goals and ambitions to keep it like that.
Very, very cool. Well, we thank you for coming on with us. And it was a pleasure getting to talk to you and meeting you the other day, and we're looking forward to meeting you at the event. And I'm telling you, as far as Bubba's concerned, you've got a winner here, and I would bet my money on you every day of the week.
Thank you so much. I am so thrilled that you offered to have me on. I just really appreciate the time and your input and all your fans, and hopefully we can share fans. That would be great. And I appreciate you coming back, Ron. Sorry to blow your time off.
No problem. It was a pleasure. Thank you for coming.
Thank you. And we'll see you guys at the event then, huh?
Let's close you out here, which is we've been talking with Jerry McFarland, and she is the CEO of Jarbox, www.jarbox.com, if you want to make a purchase. And I guess you don't sell on your site. You redirect, correct?
Yeah, they're going to mad@mypatriotsupply.com, and there are other people carrying them online, so check your favorite preparedness online store or your favorite canning online store, and you might find them there as well.
Okay, and you will see her at our expo in booth 217, which is right next to the main stage, which is very, very exciting because Ron and I are personally going to introduce you to some of the big-time people in canning like Jackie Clay and Brad and everything else, because we both definitely think you got a winner here.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thanks for adopting us in. I really appreciate it, guys.
Okay, Jerry, you take care.
Okay, you too. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. So what a sweetie, huh?
How cool is that?
I mean,
that is awesome.
Colorado Ron and I are big, big, big fans of mom and pop businesses that we get to touch like this that end up becoming successful. Because, you know, I mean, for us, there's no bigger reward than seeing someone that we work with or we meet or something like that and see him succeed. I mean, do you agree, Ron?
100%. Yep, absolutely.
So, you know, the
cool thing about, I don't know, I guess I don't want to get too crazy overboard here, but, you know, the coolest thing about this country is the fact that you can come up with an idea and run with it and be successful, and you can push it as far and as hard as you want. You know, here's a prime example of a successful entrepreneur that doesn't sound like ever has been an entrepreneur and just decided, you know what, I'm going to do it. Talked to a few family members, got together, started brainstorming, and started working hard at creating a product. You know, she found the mold maker. She did it all. She did all the legwork on her own. I mean, good for her. This is awesome. I love this product. This is so cool. It's not every day you find such an ingenious product.
Well, and not only that, you know, I have to thank Matt from My Patriot Supply, who's, you know, and also, you know, Ben listens to our show. Ben Pratt from Mercury One, the Blaze Group. You know, he introduced us to Matt from My Patriot Supply, and Matt's coming to our show also. And Matt did us a good turn and said, hey, look, we have a new product that we're going to be carrying, and, you know, here's Jerry's information, and we're going to get her a booth too. And, you know, and I better send Matt an email today because I've mentioned him about 5 times and didn't get permission to talk about his product or his company. But anyway, you know.
Sorry.
All of a sudden. We apologize, Matt. Hopefully you're okay with this. I'm going to get a cease and desist letter, you know, here in a little bit. But anyway, you know, companies like Matt and My Patriot Supply and people like Jerry at Jarbox and things like that, that's what this show and what the Self-Reliance Expo and Redshed Media is all about, which is the community helping each other build our businesses and expand it. And, you know, if everything works out great, we help Matt grow his business and Matt helps Jerry grow her business, and we just all do it, and everybody gets prepared. And when that happens, then Ron's vision of what the reason he started the company and, you know, my vision for jumping in here and becoming part of Redshed and facilitating this stuff, we all succeed, right? What do they say? When the tide rides, or tide rises, right, all ships rise, whatever it is. That was a Bubba colloquialism, you know, butchering it to death, but it fit what I wanted to say.
Rising tide raises all ships.
See, that sounds too good. That wasn't bubbified. I don't like that. Anyway, one more time, thank you to Jerry for coming on here. And Matt, I apologize if I you know, didn't get permission. Hopefully you'll forgive us because we plugged you 4 or 5 times. So let's talk about – let's wrap this last 15, 20 minutes up by talking about the expo and some of the things that are coming up there. Do you have your list with you? I sent Colorado Ron a list this morning because we got to post it this weekend of everybody that's on the main stage. And
yes.
I'll tell you what, this is probably –
this is just the main stage.
Down. This is just the main stage. We have over 63 sessions going to be at this stage – I mean at this show, 63 different sessions and speaking groups and seminars and things like that. All free with the $10 purchase, which gets you in both days. But what impresses me most is, hands down, of any expo out there and any of our expos, which we always like to exceed the last one, I think this is our best speaking group ever.
Totally. Well, looking at this list, I mean, it's incredible. I cannot believe the amount of – you want to go down the list?
Go down.
All right.
Yeah,
all right.
I think people should hear what's going on.
And these pretty much start every hour on the hour. So I'll just start at 10 o'clock, and we'll just run down the list here. Starting on Friday, we open up at 10. And we got Colleen Bishop, 10 Principles of Preparedness. We got Lisa Bedford, No Man is an Island, How to Get Your Whole Family Involved with Preparedness. Then we have Dr. David Christopher, Self-Reliant Health, Healing Through Knowledge and Truth. And then we have Alan Madison, which is National Geographic's Doomsday Prepper with an open mic Q&A.
Let's stop that one real quick. So
right.
For those of you, you know, we got a lot of flack when we first started working with National Geographic about how they were going to ruin prepping and, you know, destroy the universe and build a Death Star and, you know, God knows what else. And, you know, and that show has probably increased the recognition of preppers and the number of people who have begun prepping, I would guess, by almost double. It has been tremendous. Alan has been a good friend of our company, of Red Shed and the Expo. And he is coming out to do an open mic Q&A about not only about the show, but you know what goes on behind the scenes and rumors you've heard and everything else. And we are going to try, although I can't promise it, that we are going to have either Twitter up so we can ask questions that are Twittered to us, or have a Skype up so that way you can go ahead and call in with your Skype questions. So
yeah, that's going to be awesome.
And next week, Alan will be on live with us on the show to make a big announcement on – he was on with us 3 weeks ago, and he said that he didn't have the news yet for the next season, and he had things he couldn't tell us yet. My guess is that since he's coming on next weekend, all that stuff's been signed and done, so we'll get to hear what the big announcement is and what they're going to be doing at the event.
Awesome. All right. And I got to meet – speaking of that, I got to meet Brooklyn last week. We've talked to her a bunch on the phone, and we never actually met her in person. Yeah, I bet you were. that's why I sent you a picture.
and here's the funny thing is, she enjoyed meeting you so much, she's not coming to our event.
Ouch.
she said no, poor Brooklyn. The show's based out of New York, and she's been traveling around the country she was at USA Prepares. That's what Ron's talking about. And at Vince's show. And what they did was they have someone locally that is coming to this show and is going to be helping Alan at this show. So she doesn't have to fly in all the way from New York. So
yep.
We're just teasing you, Brooklyn. We know that you really want to come.
No, she was wonderful. And, of course, she's trying to get me on the show, and she's just a sweetheart. We sat there and talked for, I don't know, a good hour or two. She's great. Let's see here. Oh, let's continue down the list here. And then we have Patrice Lewis. That's going to be a good one. Going country, moving rural for self-reliance, Yeah.
Hold on. Let me do this, Ron, as we do this. Let's start from the top again. And each one stop because I want to make sure that I'm getting out the extra things that these folks are doing at the event. Does that work for
okay.
you?
Yep.
All right, so start at the top.
Start at the top. Colleen Bishop, 10 Principles of Preparedness.
Okay, and so Colleen Bishop will also be doing at the event, which is not on this here. She will be running Rape Prevention for Couch Potatoes, which will be a hands-on session for women on self-defense. It's $5 to participate, and I believe, and I've got to call Kelly in today, and we'll have an answer for you next weekend. We put in $500, which is 100 people that will be able to participate for free in her classes to make sure that young girls and women are able to protect themselves from these horrible crimes. So Kelly will be doing those classes in a padded area at our event.
Let's not forget, they get to beat the snot out of you too.
I wasn't going to bring that up. As part of it, I volunteered to be for the first class and the last class of each day to be the damn beat up dummy for all the women to check. So that'll be interesting too, and we'll make some interesting photographs. So let's continue.
All right, next one is Lisa Bedford, No Man is an Island, how to get your whole family involved with preparedness.
Yeah, and Lisa will also be in a booth. Lisa will have a booth set up, and she will be signing and selling her book, Survival Mom, How to Prepare Your Family for Everyday Disasters and Worst-Case Scenarios. Excellent book. Come down, get a signed copy. Lisa is a wonderful person to meet in person. So definitely come down and check that out.
Awesome. And then we have David Christopher, Self-Reliance Health, Healing Through Knowledge and Truth.
And Dr. Christopher and his staff also has a booth at the event. in which they have all, some of their books and their materials for their schools and everything else. They run a fantastic school in Colorado, and I believe they actually do online. I'm sorry, Utah. I said Colorado. Utah, and it's amazing stuff. So definitely go out there and check out their booth and check out some of their product in their classes.
Yep. And let's see here. Then we got Alan with National Geographic's Doomsday, Open Mic, which we've already talked about.
Well, hold on. And they will have a booth also in which they will be giving away product and things. And we don't have a list of that product. I'm sure Alan will bring it up next week.
Okay. Are they doing a casting call?
We don't know. Remember, that's what he was going to try to tell us. I'm hoping that's what the big news is next week, is that they sign their new season and this will be their first casting call. I believe it will be.
Okay. Awesome. And then Patrice Lewis, Going Country, Moving Rural for Self-Reliance.
So Patrice will also be having her book at the Backwoods Home magazine booth. And she will also be bringing out some of her custom mugs. You know, she does tankards, and she'll be bringing a handful of those. Yeah, they're all wood. They are beautifully done. They're actually can be used, but they're just like pieces of art. So
nice.
If you guys have ever gone to her website and checked the stuff out, it's amazing. She'll be bringing some of that product to the event.
Okay. Then next we have Jackie Clay, Living a More Self-Reliant Lifestyle.
And Jackie will also be there signing her book, and she will be in the Backwoods Home booth. I don't know if she has any slots left for her current class that will be the following weekend, but I believe she'll be starting another class, so she may be having people sign up for her classes. And I will be going up to Minnesota that following weekend and attending that class. So I'm excited.
Fun. All right. Next we have – we won't talk about the next one. All right, we'll skip that.
No, you got to do it. Go do it.
All right, next one is Ron Douglas, and it's What is Self-Reliance and Where Do I Even Start?
So that's Colorado Ron here, and he will be up on stage. Now, the rest of the time, he will be wandering around and talking to everybody. Colorado Ron likes to make sure he goes out there and gets to meet everybody and things like that. And we also have an NSRO booth, which is our company's booth, that will have information and things over there also. But please, you know, come to that because, you know, Ron definitely knows what it's like to be a guy who has to start it up. So that'll definitely be a good session for people to attend.
Okay. Next one. Thank you. Thank you, by the way. Next one is Darren Craddock, Staying Healthy in a Crisis Situation.
So Darren is a good friend of ours. He is from Inner Health Botanical. And they will have a end cap, actually a huge booth, a 20 by 20, at the front of the venue when you walk in the door. And they'll have all their health products. I'll tell you what, the drink, the Inner Health drink, swing by, get a free sample. That'll keep you going for the whole show.
That's right.
It's the stuff locked. We live on it. They actually make a special bucket of it for Ron and I at the event. So.
Yeah, keeps us going. That's for sure. All right. And then finally, we'll wrapping it up with Dr. Bones, Nurse Amy, the Survival Medic, Basics of Collapse Medicine.
Right. And Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy will be sharing a booth with Equipped to Endure. They do an NCAP, and they'll be selling their trauma kits and their book. They have a wonderful book out. And more than that, they will have, and I still think there's a couple of spots open. They will be doing their famous suturing class, which you can sign up for on the Facebook page, and you know, you can look over their website and take a look at it and get it everything else. And you'll actually get a pig's foot, and you will learn to do suturing. And I think your wife took the class last time, Ron. And you said
she said it was
fantastic.
She did. She loved it, and she totally freaks out at the sight of blood and stuff, so I didn't know how well she was going to do, you know, suturing up a pig's foot. But she did amazing. She loved it. She had a great time doing it, and she said she'd do it again in a heartbeat. So she learned a lot. And you get to take away the kit. So you actually take away a suturing kit with you. So very cool. Very cool. And then let's see here. On Saturday, we have we got Women in Prepping, the keynotes.
So the only thing different, from 11 to 1, we have the Women of Prepping, which are probably some of the best known women out there in prepping. We'll have Nurse Amy, Kellyn Bishop, Jackie Clay, Patrice Lewis, and Kellyn Bishop all on stage talking about different categories in prepping and things like that. And starting tomorrow, we will have a URL live. You guys can go ahead and do things now. But it's www.panelquestions@selfreliancexpo.com. That's PanelQuestions.
What do you mean www?
Actually, I did www. I'm wrong. Anyway, panelquestions@selfreliancexpo. Forget the www. panelquestions@selfreliancexpo.com. It's an email address on a website. And you can send your questions in for the ladies for the panel session. And that will go. That will be distributed tomorrow. And I think that's going to be a fantastic 2 hours.
Yes. It'll be an amazing 2 hours. I can't wait to. I'm officially taking a break, just so you know. I want to be there for the panel. So, let's see here. What else? Karen Hood. Karen Hood. Instinctive survival and preparedness.
Now, Karen will actually be speaking on both days. On the first day, she's on the 101 stage, and then she's doing a full presentation, keynote position from 2 to 2:45 on the main stage on Saturday, and that's super exciting.
Yes. That's really cool. I really appreciate her coming. Let's see. We also have Ann Haney, 4 Steps to Becoming a Successful Entrepreneur and Raising Entrepreneurial Children.
Yep, and Ann Haney will also have a booth there. Ann Haney is an expert on homeschooling and child education, and we're very happy to have her at the event and meeting people and imparting her knowledge to people who want to get into homeschooling.
And then we also have Appleseed, 3 strikes of the match.
Now, I 2 things on this. So Appleseed will have a huge booth. They are a partner of ours, and we have them at every single event. And they set up a little shooting range over there with pellet guns. But these are high-powered, very accurate pellet guns, and they teach you the basics of shooting. And they also teach you the basics of the Constitution and kind of get and do things. And it's a great program, www.appleseed.org, if you want to check it out. So here's my question. Do you know what 3 strikes of a match, and I don't know if this is what their thing is, what does 3 strikes of a match refer to, Colorado?
I have no idea. I was hoping you
never. Oh, I do. It's an old military thing. I don't know if that's what they're using it for, but there was an old saying 3 strikes of a match, or excuse me, 3 to a match is bad luck, right? 3 to a match is bad luck. And that is an old World War I reference. Because they told you 3 to a match was bad luck because the third person who would use a match would usually be killed. And what would happen was you were in foxholes, and the first person would strike a match, and they would gauge distance. And the match would get passed, or the second match would get striked, and they'd gauge windage. And then the third person that the match lit on was usually the one that got shot. So 3 to a match was always bad luck.
Interesting.
Military lore,
cool.
Guys.
Very cool. Well, and that's what's cool about Appleseed. They always come out with these all this cool information and historical stories about marksmanship. And so you always learn a ton when they come up and do a presentation. But that's just the main stage. I mean, we still got 2 other stages.
And next week we will we'll go ahead and make sure that we cover the other stages, so that way everybody's getting as much of the information and can plan their session. I want to give one shout out before we close out today, because we're running at the top of the hour, and our bottom of the hour, excuse me. And that is, we've got 3 groups. I got a phone call, Colorado, and I think I told you about this yesterday, I got three of them. The first one at 5 o'clock in the morning, and then the other two that came later. There is three couples that are driving out all the way from New York to come to our event.
Isn't that amazing?
They're actually planning their vacation to come to the Colorado Springs event. And wow. I was shocked when they called. They called and were asking all kinds of questions, what time the doors open, how much were the tickets, was it good for both days, all things I could have found on the net. But I was glad that they called. And, they're coming because they want to see Kellyn Bishop and the women of prepping and everything else. Because let me tell you, I don't think there's ever been an event where all these women have been in the same place at the same time. Any one of them individually, Nurse Amy or any of them, would probably draw a significant crowd for getting their book signed and things like that. But Lisa Bedford, any of them would do fantastic. And that they're all in one place at one time, I think probably is drive worthy. So, a shout out to those people.
Yeah, safe travels to you guys. No, go ahead. So I was just saying, yeah, absolutely, I agree. That's amazing that they're coming out that far, and safe travels to them, for sure.
Ask for either Colorado Ron or Bubba Da Vinci when you're walking around the thing, and we will personally come over and shake your hands and everything else, because that means a lot to both of us that you're willing to travel all that far to come to one of our events.
That's right. And just so you don't get confused between us, I'm the good-looking one.
I'm the one probably breaking something on the floor. So we should be easy to spot. All right. Well, guys, it's the end of another show. We appreciate your patronage, and we appreciate you guys coming back every week and listening to what we have to say. We want to thank our sponsors, Humless, InnerHealth, and Sun Oven. Without them, these shows wouldn't be possible, so big thanks to them. And our main backer, Backwoods Home Magazine, fantastic magazine. The new one will be on the newsstands here shortly. You should be able to pick it up anywhere. And I guess that's it. Come follow us on our website.
And you'd already have it if you had a subscription.
I do have a subscription, but it hasn't come in the mail yet. It's Iowa. Come on. Anyway, www.backwoodshome.com to go to Backwoods Home Magazine. www.selfallianceexpo.com to find all the information about our expos. You can follow us on Facebook, Backwoods Home Mag, Preparedness Radio, Self Reliance Expo, or Bubba Da Vinci. You guys have a blessed day, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Take care, guys.
You've been listening to BHM Radio, the official show for Backwoods Home Magazine on the Preparedness Radio Network. Tune in every other week at this time to get more information on the articles you love. Questions or comments for the hosts? Email them at coloradoron@gmail.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives.
It's the 21st century, a dangerous world. Preppers need food and medicine. Why not have the best? Enterfood.com does the shopping, prep, and packaging for you using the best organic ingredients on the planet. Right now, specials are available for listeners of this station. The all-organic vegetarian food storage pail and the herbal medicine cabinet. The pail holds up to 120 flavorful meals, super packed fresh to last up to 15 years, soaked, cooked, or raw. The herbal medicine cabinet holds everything you'll need to cure common ailments. Use these items in an emergency or use them when camping. You can't beat these prices. Call to order now, 866-762-9238, 866-762-9238, or go to enerfood.com. That's enerfood.com, enerfood.com.
Yeah?
Did you want to see me, sir?
Well, I did, but now that I do, I'm not so sure.
Sir?
Johnson, I got a mission for you that could change your life.
Oh, good, sir.
It involves traveling halfway around the world without so much as half a clue of where you're going and what you're going to do when you get there.
Situation normal, sir?
Uh-huh. Right, I'll be leading this mission, Johnson, so I'll be telling you what to do.
You, sir?
That's right, Johnson, and I say first things first.
Oh, good plan, sir.
And what I say is first is food. Always remember that, Johnson. Food is a big deal.
Sir, my brother-in-law can get us a really good deal on some surplus MREs.
Johnson, if you've got half a brain in that empty head of yours, you'll call the freeze-dry guy like I did. That food is better for you, it rehydrates faster, and it's good, Johnson, and it keeps for up to 30 years.
Will we be gone that long, sir?
I hope not.
Now get your supplies organized and meet me down to the pier at dawn on Sunday. We sail at sunrise.
Yes, sir.
This adventure is brought to you by the freeze-dry guy. Call 866-404-3663 or visit freezedryguy.com.
Looking for power grid independence? The Humless Solar Kit is the answer. Increasing brownouts in the U.S. suggest it's time to get a backup. The problem is gas generators are messy, require maintenance, and oh, gas, which may be scarce in a real emergency. Get the Humless Solar Kit by itself or with a 1,000-watt Humless Sentinel generator. The kit includes a 100-watt solar panel, 20-foot extension cord, LED floodlight, rechargeable flashlights, and more. Become a fan at Humless.com or on Facebook.
You've been listening to the Preparedness Radio Network, offering helpful and timely tips on preparing for natural and man-made disasters. Timely and useful tips on gardening and homesteading. Check us out online at BePreparedRadio.com. Until next time, remember, preparedness saves lives. This is the Preparedness Radio Network.